everyone, and welcome to the June 2022 edition of Post Perez. My name's W.H. Park, and you know, I'm still getting used to this video gimmick of the Zoom chats to record this show, but yeah, it's kind of a staple. Normally, if I'm doing this with John, like John Pollock, we're probably using the StreamYard gimmick, but you know, when we're recording this, John and Wei are going to be recording Review of SmackDown, so and so like we have to use the Zoom, which is fine because you know it is so, just so people know, it's Friday night. So anyways, joining me on this month's edition is not John Paul, of course, but even better, yes, I said it, even better, John would say, well, it's probably, yeah, it's true, it's, you know, it's Karen Peterson, the content creator extraordinaire, you know, Dream Slam Weekly, which will be coming out sometime this weekend, you know, appearing on tons of podcasts all over the place, interviews with the biggest stars of Japanese pro wrestling, her own Twitch stream watch alongs. Karen, I thank you for finding the time in your very, very busy schedule, because you also have a shoot job as well, you know, but in terms of your content creating, to join me on Post Perez this month.
Post Perez is one of my favorite places to content create. So anytime you give me an invitation, I'm here for you.
Well, I mean, it's good because we got a lot of topics to talk about. We're going to go through some results from shows that happened a couple of weeks ago. We're not going to go too in depth, you know, like just kind of run through maybe the top matches of, say, the Cyber Fight Festival, talk about upcoming things that are happening in Pro Wrestling NOAH. And yeah, and I kind of want to, you got to remind me, I didn't put this in my notes, but I have a theory, because at Cyber Fight Festival, one Keiji Muto announced that he's going to retire. He's going to go on a retirement tour that's going to end in the spring of next year. And my initial reaction, I'll just say this off, man, was like, yeah, I'm going to retire. Yeah, sure you are.
Do you guys actually ever retire?
Well, I think he's going to. I mean, all kidding aside, I think he's going to retire. Yeah. I do think he's in such, you know, terrible physical condition with his hips that it's time for him to go. But I have a theory as to, like, the way he's been booked the last couple of years, like why he's just been winning all the time. Cause he wasn't always like this, you know, like, yeah. I was a huge fan and he put people over, but why isn't he putting people over? I don't know. Well, I do kind of have a theory, but I don't, it's just my theory, but we'll get to that. We're going to talk about Dominion and some of the interesting results from that. Some road to New Japan Road. I can't remember. Like, why do they call it, you know, they got road to shows and they got this fucking tour called the Road, New Japan Road. Like, just make up your mind.
Where does the New Japan Road lead? To the G1? Is it leading to the Forbidden Door? Because the Forbidden Door is kind of like wedged in the middle of the New Japan Road.
Well, we're going to do a preview of the Forbidden Door. We're going to, you know, I kind of talked about this. I'll see you later at the end where I was like, oh yeah, this is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the incredible build that, you know, Tony Khan has been putting together for the last couple of weeks to this amazing looking show on paper. No, we'll talk about it. I'm going to be fair about it. Like, I just, so people know, I'm going to be watching Forbidden Door at a friend's house. We're going to have K-Bobs, apparently. Maybe coleslaw.
Ooh, so, you know, look at you guys fancy.
Yeah. So that's going to be, you know, if I don't enjoy the show, I think I'll enjoy the show. But we'll talk about the preview there. What else we got? Karen, what else we got? We're going to talk about the G1.
G1, a little bit of stardom.
Yeah, I just watched a video on the Stardom YouTube channel. We'll talk about this, like, where some person in a Halloween, like a skull mask and covered in a robe, like, choked out Rossi Ogawa and then choked out Sayakami Tani. Did you see this?
I
don't know if it came out today or yesterday, but
I definitely haven't seen it this month. But between the events of this Friday, I started my morning off at the dentist and everything was fine. Yeah. Teeth are fine. Everything looks great. And then it proceeded to go steeply downhill right around lunchtime. So.
Yeah. I mean, we will. Yeah, it sucks. The events of today in the United States and really it resonates throughout the world. So up here in Canada, we're very, very sympathetic to, you know, all our, you know, women friends down. And I, unfortunately, I don't think it's the end. I think there's going to be a lot.
No,
more
it's going to get much worse, unfortunately.
Happening later on, but
yes, I just pulled up Stardom's YouTube page. I have not seen this video of whomever is choking out Kamitani.
Yeah, but check out the, you know, maybe to the delight of many a Rossi Ogawa hater out there. They choke this person, whoever it is.
This assailant who's dressed a little early for Halloween.
Yes, it attacked Rossi Ogawa first, and you know. I know there are a lot of people rationally hate Rossi Ogawa. It's like, listen, if you know, you can feel however you want about Rossi Ogawa. I would just say this. If it weren't for him, there would be no Stardom. All right. So, and I'm happy that Stardom exists. Because I think it's my favorite promotion these days. So, you know, it has been for quite a while now. But anyways, we're going to talk about All Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about the crowning of one of your favorites, Jake Lee, as Triple Crown Champion. We're going to talk about kind of some new, you know, like groups, factions being kind of created, the dismantling of Next Dream, you know, and like Yuma Aoyagi, and one of my favorites, you know, teaming with Jake. I'm hoping this means Jake's going to get a new costume, because this fucking vampire thing, whatever the fuck that is.
It's a little too dark and heavy for summertime in Japan. Like, he must be sweating to pieces in it.
It just looks dumb. Like, I like Jake, but that looks dumb. Anyways, we'll get to his like, you know, I really think he's just doing like a dollar store Shinsuke Nakamura at this point. So we'll get to that. Yeah, what else are we going to talk about? G1, we're going to talk about All Japan Pro Wrestling. We're going to talk about the New Japan Stardom thing. We got actually quite a bit of Joshi news on this. You sent me some notes earlier about.
I have to open up my notes, actually.
Yeah. So we got a lot of things. We are going to try to not take too much time, as you know.
You say this, but what we usually minimum is like 90 minutes for us.
Yeah, but we should have ambitions to like not be too long, but you know, we'll see what happens. You know, anyways, first up, let's talk about we're going to talk about the Cyber Fight Festival. Let me get my notes here. And this was a show that happened. When was this show again, Karen?
Fight Festival was on Sunday, June 12th, the same time as Dominion.
That's right. Which show did better attendance? Because this is like 5,000 people, right?
They had a very large turnout.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, it rivaled Dominion, if not crushed it.
Well, I mean, the thing with, like, you know, Saitama Super Arena, it normally holds like about triple that, I think. Like, it, like, yeah, 15,000 seat venue normally for, like, say, for MMA and pro wrestling. So obviously, you know, there are still restrictions in Japan regarding COVID. So but you know, like, I don't know how that affects attendance anymore, because it does look like people are the attendance rules are really lax. Like, I've seen pictures of, like, you know, Yomiuri Giants games at Tokyo Dome, like, fucking full, and I'm like, whoa, okay. Like,
did you see the photos of the K1 the match that they just had? It was the kickboxing at the Tokyo Dome.
I saw the outside. Like, I was like, whoa.
Oh no! I'll send you a photo of what it looked like on the inside. Shoulder to shoulder. Yeah. I mean, the gate alone was, I think, $25 million.
Wow.
Plus another 25 in pay-per-view buys. And that was limited to inside Japan.
That's so insane.
And Okada's like, we'll do the same numbers. And I'm like, okay.
No, you're not going to do the same numbers. You know, not on
a Tuesday or a Wednesday for Wrestle Kingdom.
not with Jay White as the fucking champion. You're not, like, he's not a draw.
We'll get to that.
Man. He's not a fucking
draw. We'll get
to that. Anyways, we're going to talk about the kind of the top matches. But, like, overall, I didn't watch the whole show. I watched, you know, from the top four matches from like the Nakajima, Kotoge, and Inamura six man against Burning, which with the kind of, you know, it's kind of a worrying stoppage there, but you watched the whole show, Karen.
Yes, I did. I will never live stream a whole show that starts at 1 o'clock in the morning ever again. Ever. Ever, ever.
Hey, that's on you.
It was totally on me. I was not having a good time. It was just so hard to stay up.
My sleep cycle takes precedence over Japanese wrestling these days. So like, I'll watch something later on when I have time. But overall, what did you think about Cyber Fight Festival this year?
I remember watching it last year and I was like, this is a good sampler of all four companies if someone's looking to get into that particular company. For me, it's like, you know, my thing was that NOAH was my gateway into the larger scheme of Cyber Fight. And top to bottom, it was a good show. There were matches on it that I didn't particularly like. Like there's a match, an 8-person tag that had this group from DDT called Pheromones. They're not my thing. I don't like their shtick. It makes me uncomfortable. But there was another 8-man match that had like Hiroshima in it. And it was all the good things that people have been telling me about DDT for the last 3 or 4 years, but I wasn't willing to sit down and watch it because I knew that there was other parts of DDT, like some of the comedy that they do, that I'm not really comfortable with. But that 8-man that was later on in the card that also had Yoshimura and Katsumata and a bunch of the younger talent on it. Chris Brooks was on in that match too. Fantastic match. Really liked it. That slap with Nakajima to Tetsuya Endo, you could tell the moment it happened that Katsu was okay. He kept cool for about a minute, or not even a minute, like a second. And then he realized Endo wasn't getting back up. And it was one of those things where, you know, you don't want to see things go sideways in a match because it was very early on in the match. And they did a good job of keeping the cameras off of Endo and kind of keeping it tight on, you know, Akiyama trying to get in Katsu's face, but Katsu like trying to not break character. But I've never seen that man want to leave a ring faster in my entire life.
Yeah, so for context, we're talking about the Katsuhiko Nakajima Sushi Kotoge, and Nakajima was replacing an injured Naomi Shimura Fuji in this match.
He
wasn't even scheduled for the show.
Which correct.
Is insane to me. But because like Mara Fuji was injured, Nakajima filled in, and they were teaming with Yoshiki Inamura, who he's got a new kind of 80s aerobics apocalyptic road warrior gimmick now with his new gear with all the studs. I'm not a big fan of it. I like the tire design of his old gear, like that was way better. But anyways, they took on the team of Burning, which is the DDT version of this, which is of course led by Jun Akiyama and his tag team partner and protege Tetsuya Endo. And they were teaming with Kazusada Higuchi, who's normally part of a group called Eruption, but he was part of this tag team. And then in about the 6-minute mark, there was a referee stoppage because Katsuhiko Nakajima slapped Tetsuya Endo very hard, and like not deliberately to hurt him. It's like he's, you know, Nakajima is very well known for being a very stiff striker, and I do think, just like my understanding of the injury was that Endo didn't like the way he reacted to the move was he didn't brace himself enough, from my understanding. I could be wrong. I'm like, this is what I read. And and his head snapped the wrong way, and this caused him to have a concussion. So not Nakajima trying to being clumsy or deliberately hurting anyone. It's like, and I hate seeing that narrative. Like, listen, this guy's been wrestling since he's been like 15 years old.
Yeah.
For 15 years he's been wrestling, and he's always been stiff. I rarely have ever heard or seen him ever injure anyone. Like,
correct.
Deliberately. And people will like say, oh, what about Kotoge when the press conference? That, again, you know what? That's Kotoge not taking that slap well. And like, you know, like I, so
when I watch, oh, I'm sorry.
No, like, I just, my thing is like, you know, you can tell Akiyama very upset about this.
Yes.
And I think that's not a work that like he was genuinely upset that, you know, he felt like it seemed like, and by his demeanor as he's talking very angrily to Katsuhiko Nakajima, he blamed him, and you know, for the injury. But fortunately, Endo seems to be like, he'll be okay. He did have to relinquish the DDT openweight title, and that's going to be contested in the currently running, I think, the King of
DDT. Yes, the KOD tournament's running right now, or the King of DDT tournament.
And
the other thing about, and the way Endo took that hit, is that he took the strike and he didn't really, you know, like usually when someone does that kind of stuff, sometimes they kind of follow through it with a bit. When he hit the mat with his ukemi, his head like bounced off, like it bounced off the mat.
Yeah.
So like he didn't, it wasn't just the hit, it was him hitting the mat as well, that it just exacerbated it. And he got his bell ring twice, like boom, boom. So yeah. Like, so people who were getting all uppity about Nakajima, it's a move he's done countless times. It's an accident. Accidents happen. He wasn't trying to hurt anyone.
It's a physical, wrestling is physical. It is dangerous. And yes, like accidents do happen. Unfortunately, in wrestling, I wish, you know, it's, you know, we like wrestlers could control everything about wrestling, and but no, it's, you know, especially in Japan, this like presented more as a real sport, and that's people do hit each other harder for good or bad, you know. Anyways, but fortunately, it looks like Endo will be okay and hopefully return to the ring soon when he's fully recovered, and then probably will challenge. They have a built-in storyline. He's going to challenge whoever does win the KOD open weight title. And then, you know, we got a match for DDT. There you go.
Yay.
Anyways, let's move on. Now the next match, DDT versus Noah, DDT represented by Daisuke Sasaki, who I'm not really a fan of. I don't hate him, but I'm not a fan of him. Like, cause he's like that kind of DDT wrestler, like a lot of shtick, a lot of gimmicks. And, you know, but he acquitted himself very well in this match against Kendo, who sported an amazing hairstyle. Looked like a fucking character from fucking Dragon Ball Z or something like that. And you read manga and watch anime more than I do these days.
I have my weeby tendencies at times. Right? Yeah.
So was this based on any character from current manga or anime?
As far as I know, he hasn't said either way. But the fact that the man always combs his salad bowl haircut straight forward. He's all business. But the fact that he styled it, I mean, it was standing on end. And he had the brand new costume. His gear maker, chef's kiss, like 12 stars, like all the stars. Because that paired with the entrance that they prepared for him, including the lead singer of the band that does his entrance music, singing his entrance theme live, where he got all hyped and sang along. And, you know, he doesn't normally do comedy, but he was ready for this match. And again, charisma or Sasaki, he was another one that his vibe wasn't my thing. So it was a match I would skip. So, but seeing the way that they played off of each other and that he would kind of egg Kenno on into doing comedy, like when you put like the Gundam helmet on him, or, you know, other things that happened in that match. I liked it because you get to see you get to see a little bit more of the scope of DDT, but also a lot more personality out of Kenno, because he's usually very straight-laced, serious, all business all the time. When he took Yoshihiko and launched him into like the 18th row, may have set a new record, I don't know, but was proud of that. And to go back for ladder matches, I never want to see another excuse for a rickety, crappy aluminum ladder in a Japanese wrestling ring ever again. Because in this match, they had people in the ring, visual be damned, bracing the stupid ladder to make sure nobody got unnecessarily hurt.
No, I mean, that's a staple of Japanese ladder matches. Like most people, most promotions, especially DDT, like they'll just have like the, sometimes they'll have the referee, which I'm not a big fan of. Like, get the seconds to do it, like the young boys or something to do it.
I mean, they had like one of the seconds do it for Sasaki, but then like all of Congo just decided to all like wrap themselves around the ladder, right, so Kenno didn't like kill himself doing the professional foot stomp off the top.
I mean, seeing Masakatsu Funaki, like a legend, you know, a shoot style wrestler, just going there to brace the ladder for Kenno is kind of amusing to watch. But I enjoyed this match because the thing I liked was that Kenno stayed true to himself. He didn't necessarily become a comedy wrestler. This wasn't really a comedic match. This is like more Sasaki, like pushing like
his buttons.
Pushing. It's like, you hate fucking DDT for you because you think we're comedy wrestlers. Da da da. well, you have the blow up doll, da 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 da. Well, I'm gonna just throw that in your face, and it was very, very like heated, and I really liked this. I would urge people to go out and watch this.
Yeah,
Kenno did defeat Sasaki in 21 minutes and 28 seconds by pinfall. This was a no disqualification match. What is that match? I laugh every time there's a no disqualification match in Japanese wrestling because there's no fucking DQ in any of these matches. Like everyone, all of Bullet Club could interfere in a fucking match, and Evil can hit everyone with a fucking chair like multiple times. The referees aren't going to stop the match, right? So like, no DQ. Come on, give me a break.
I mean, I also would like to give massive props to Masakatsu Funaki for being the one to ride the Mama Chari bicycle down the ramp. Even though he ended up hitting his own teammate with it.
Yes.
It wasn't what I expected, because last year during the I guess there was a DDT Rumble, Kenno was the one that rode the bicycle down the ramp. So everyone was expecting him to do it again. So the fact that they managed to convince Funaki to be the one to do it, I was like, okay, fine. I can't be mad at it.
I was just happy to see he didn't fall off the ramp. It wasn't very the most steadiest of bike rides. So you would think, like, you know, for people who don't know what a Mama Chari is, it's a bicycle with a basket, and it's katakana, like
Japanese English
for mother chariot, Mama Chariot. Yep. Mama Chari. So like, I remember
usually there's a baby seat on the back, and sometimes they also have a baby seat on the front. So it's mom taking all the kids and all the groceries and everything all piled onto this like a fixie bicycle that has like no gear shift, just brakes and a bell. That's it. That's you get.
Yeah, even like, you know, dads will use it too. Like
I had one the same color. I had that red one.
I never rode a Mama Chari. Like I actually had like bicycle for a very short period when I lived in Japan, and I hated it because like we have bicycle lanes here in Canada for the most part. There's no bicycle lanes in Japan.
Yeah.
You are at the fucking mercy. You can ride on the sidewalk. Which
I was on the sidewalk. I was a sidewalk queen.
It drove me fucking crazy because like I'd be like, I'm on the sidewalk walking. I hate people riding their fucking bicycles on the sidewalk in Japan. But anyways, I did not ride my bicycle that often. I just walked everywhere, and I it was great exercise. Like, so didn't have a car, just walked everywhere pretty much. If I couldn't go there by train, I just walked. You know, like grocery store, walked. Go to Don Quixote, I walked. You know, like,
I took the train until there was a incident on the train that highly motivated me to get my license so I could start driving to work, because there was somebody who was going to follow me home one day, I didn't want him following me home one day.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
It was not a good time.
This is all too common, by the way, people. Like, you know, those of you who like, Japan's wonderful because it's so safe. Well, if you're a dude, for the most part, it's safe. If you're a woman, if you're a Western woman, it's no. I'm sorry. Like, and this is something I had to learn like the hard way, just like the horror stories I would hear from all my female women friends in Japan. Like there was like not a single person that I knew that was a woman who did not have like some kind of stalker.
At least one.
Yeah. It's crazy. So like, I love Japan, but it's not a paradise, people. Like,
it's not a perfect place.
It has its faults, trust me.
It's just as effed up as everywhere else, let's be honest.
But anyways, like we don't want to be too negative here on today's show. Probably my favorite match was I'm not a regular watcher of Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling.
Oh yeah.
But I really like this match. I actually am a huge fan of Shoko Nakajima. I love the gimmick. I think she's an amazing wrestler. And she is the current Princess of Princess Champions for TJPW. And she defended her title against another great wrestler who works for TJPW. And that's Yuka Sakazaki, who, of course, many people know as the Happy Wizard gimmick. Happy Magic
Girl. Magical Girl.
She's a magical girl in All Elite Wrestling. This is a really, really fun 15-minute match. A lot of great high flying, a lot of great ground wrestling, a lot of great striking. Yuka Sakazaki is a great striker. Like that, like everyone talks about Miyu Yamashita as being like
correct
the best, and she's the best striker in the company and one of the best strikers in all of wrestling. But Yuka, like, holy shit, she can throw a fucking punch, and she, like, it's great. I highly recommend this match. It's like, if you're really pressed for time, you want to go back and watch this somehow. I recommend this match more than anything else. It's a really great Shoko Nakajima versus Yuka Sakazaki for the Princess of Princess titles.
And the other thing is that it was Yuka's attempt to become a 3-time Princess of Princess champion.
Yeah.
And, you know, both she and Nakajima have both been on AEW television. So for those who are curious about Tokyo Joshi Pro, they are two of the mainstays that have crossed over into the international mainstream because of AEW. But it was one of those matches where it's like, I watched that match several times just because I could not get enough of it. Because it's all the good things that people have told me about Tokyo Joshi Pro. The speed, the technique, the character building, the fact that they used to be tag team partners. Now they're on separate roads. So they're now their forever rivals. And it shows because each one of them had a counter and answer for every single thing that happened in the ring. There was never any hemming and hawing or trying to figure out what to do next. It was just boom, 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 boom. Probably it was one of the more fast moving matches. Which was, you know, needed that late in the card because it was a very long card.
Oh, yeah. So this is like 14 matches.
It was, right? 14 matches.
Plus like pre-show stuff, maybe.
I think including the pre-show, it was 14 matches.
That's ridiculous.
It was like a 6-hour show. It was truly a super show.
I mean, honestly, like I would probably have been like outside for most of this stuff, just relaxing and then coming back to the seats for the matches I wanted to watch.
Yeah.
That's how I roll sometimes at live shows. But finally, our main event for the show was for the GHC heavyweight title. Go Shizaki, defending champion, taking on from New Japan Pro Wrestling, one of Karen's favorites, one of my favorites, the president of the Bread Club, Satoshi Kojima, you know, the Mr. Cozy, you know, came in.
Bread Dad.
And he achieved the ProRes Grand Slam by defeating Go for the GHC title. See, he is one of four men now to have held the Grand Slam of Japanese professional wrestling, which is being IWGP champion, All Japan Triple Crown champion, and the GHC heavyweight champion. So the other people would be Yoshihiro Takayama, Keiji Muto, and the first person to do this, I believe, was Kensuke Sasaki. So it's a very, very rarefied, very prestigious group of people to be in the club with. And I think it'd be very, very hard to kind of replicate the Grand Slam. Like those four guys were able to achieve most of these things at a time when Japanese wrestling borders were quite open,
yeah,
between promotions. Not so much these days. Like, I don't know if we're going to ever see that kind of a period of the early 2000s, early 2010s kind of.
A lot would need to change very quickly.
Yes.
And I don't know if anyone in the current era would be able to achieve it unless they were to do either Kiyomiya or make it Okada, but Okada isn't going anywhere else because he's flat out said that he doesn't keep tabs on the minor league. So I don't see him strolling into All Japan or Noah to try to become champion.
No, I don't see that happen. Unless he has a massive falling out with New Japan. He just goes freelance, like Kensuke Sasaki did before him. But with this, I thought this was a very fun match. Lariat versus Lariat, Kojima's Lariat taught to him. Refined by the legendary Stan Hansen. And I don't know if you've ever seen the video when he was in All Japan. And he's challenging Toshiaki Kawada to become Triple Crown champion. And Stan Hansen's still involved and he's still going to Japan to hang out do stuff for All Japan. And there's this great video of just Stan Hansen shooting Kojima into the ropes and just hitting him with his own lariat. Doing it again. And like, you know, Stan Hansen's a lot older at this point, but he's still probably blind as a bat. So yeah, like he's probably hitting Kojima really fucking hard.
Really hard.
Like I just read something on the Four Pillars of Heaven Twitter account where Kobashi had said, like, the rule was if you had to fight Stan Hansen on a show, you had the next day off.
Oh wow.
That's how brutal it was wrestling Stan Hansen. But so anyways, Go Shizaki, his lariat taught to him by his mentor, the legendary Kenta Kobashi. And so it was like Stan Hansen versus Kenta Kobashi, once again, reliving the golden age of All Japan Pro Wrestling, the 90s, which, by the way, you can hear match reviews and discussions about that era on the Long and Winding Railroad.
I was going to ask you, where can I find out more about that, WH?
Well, you know, here at Post Wrestling, we got you covered. So, you know, last episode featured John Pollock. We talked about the greatest tag match of all time, 6-9-95. Have you seen that match, Karen?
I saw a clip of it.
Yes.
I've watched a lot of wrestling in the last week, so I couldn't really tell you much about it.
Fair enough. I do recommend watching it, getting the backstory. You know, watch it, listen to the show, go back and watch it again, and you'll be like, oh my God, that's what that whole sequence was about. And that's what that dropkick to the knee meant. Oh my God.
Oh Lord.
But there you go. Anyways, your thoughts on this match.
It's hard for me because this is one of those matches where I'm like, this is a match made just for me because I love Shiozaki. I love Kojima. And either way, regardless if Kojima walked out as the new champion or Shiozaki retained, I was going to be happy either way. But personally, I know that, you know, sometimes we poo-poo Noah for putting too much on the older talent. But since this had more historical significance in the greater landscape of Japanese wrestling, I was okay with it. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the chops. It was a lot of chopping to be had, but yeah. I was glad to see the match. And I'm glad that, you know, they've put their faith in Kojima to be the one to shoulder the championship for a little bit. And, for the Summer of Cozy, I'm here for it. I'm here for the Summer of Bread Dad.
Unlike some of these other people that they've, you know, brought in that aren't Noah born, you know, with Kojima, I don't really have a problem with him because he's proven that he's someone who you can trust to do business.
Yeah.
To put other people over. Keiji Muda, unlike Kazuki Fujita, they're not going to put anyone fucking over because they're only interested in lining their own pockets. So anyways, with that, I did like this match. I do recommend people watch it. It's a great, if you like chops, if you like lariats, this is for you, you know.
It's a buffet of chops and lariats. That's what this match is.
For sure. So with that, with Kojima, you know, winning the title, he's an outsider. So of course, the person who's going to come out to challenge, the person who hates outsiders in Noah, and that's Kenno. And he challenged Kojima for a title match, which is going to happen at the Navigation Show in July. Where is that show happening?
Budokan, I think?
At the Budokan? Yeah, it's gonna be pretty good.
Let me check it up. Let me chase it up for you real quick.
So I don't think Kenno's gonna win. I think Kenno's gonna lose. I think, you know, Kojima's probably gonna be keeping this title for quite a while. The only person I see Kojima losing this title to is Keiji Muto. Or you know, my other theory is that he'll lose it to Kaito Kiyomiya. And then Kaito Kiyomiya will lose the title to Keiji Muto on his retirement.
Because Kiyomiya's match with Keiji Muto, isn't it at Navigation on the 16th?
Oh, is that, that's one of the first ones, right?
Yeah, he's the top batter in the final five with Keiji Muto.
Well, Karen, you know what could happen is, like, you know, Keiji Muto beats him, Kiyomiya wins the title later on, and then Keiji Muto says, I got a pinfall victory.
Oh, by the way, it is at the Nippon Budokan on July 16th.
Budokan. Okay, so at Budokan Hall, we'll have Kenno versus Kojima for the GHC title in the main event of that show. That should be good. I'm looking forward to seeing that match. I think it'll be a very nice clash of styles between Kenno and Kojima. But yes. But I do predict Kojima will retain the GHC title and head into some kind of showdown with his former mentor in Keiji Muto, where he might lose the title. It's very likely.
Do you think they would do it during the N1? Because I think the N1 is happening starting in August.
Yeah, usually N1 is like middle of September, right? I think.
I want to say it's August to September this year.
Are they going to coincide with the G1?
I genuinely think there are. And that's why Cozy's not in the G1 this year.
Well, let's be honest. He was going to be in the G1 anyways. Because, you know, they got to make room for Chase Owens, you know, and Bad Luck Fale. You know, they can't put someone who's actually good in it because they got to, you know, load it with some shit in there. So we'll get to the G1. Don't worry, people. So no, I don't think it'll happen during, like, not like, I don't like, I think they're like the N1 is like very much like the G1, designed to create a challenger for the GHC champion. So unless they have a sideshow where it's like, okay, we're maybe the finals, they'll have the finals and they'll have a title match. Which I kind of think that's kind of dumb to burn a title match if you're going to have a guaranteed, you know, attraction in just the finals of the tournament. But you know, it's Noah. They do a lot of stupid things, you know.
Because how is it I cannot find the? Sorry, I'm looking for the dates of the N1 victory this year, and I cannot find it. Hold on.
If you
I'm trying to be
traditionally, it's in the middle of September. But like, if they're trying to like just you know say F you to New Japan, maybe we're gonna have it like you know overlap a little with the G1. I wouldn't be surprised. So. But yeah, that's coming up. I don't know. I'm not excited about the N1. Like Noah's just kind of there.
I just don't know who will have win it this year because they've had Nakajima win it 2 years in a row.
I don't think Muto's going to be in like the N1. So Nakajima, I don't see Nakajima winning it. I'd be very surprised if he won it. What I can see. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I found it. It is starting on August 13th and running through September 3rd with 9 stops.
When's the G1 finals again?
The 16th, 17th, 18th.
Right. So.
Correction. It starts on August 11th. So August 11th, 13th, 14th, 17th, 19th, 20th, 27th, 28th. And then the finals are on the 3rd at the Edeon Arena in Osaka.
That's deliberate, everyone. Just so you know, that is actually very deliberate on the part of Pro Wrestling Noah, I think, or Cyber Fight, because you know they're lending out Kojima. But honestly, January, that's when all the contracts in New Japan come up, right, Karen?
Traditionally, that's end of January is because you're starting to wrap up your fiscal year. That usually ends in March, so. January is usually the time that people have to re-sign or say bye-bye.
I think Kojima is going to be saying bye-bye. I think he's going to go to Pro Wrestling now because the track record for people in his age group in that company is not good. If he wants to still be kind of have a meaningful run, like here's the thing: Cyber Agent is a much bigger company.
Yes.
And then Bushiroad, the parent company in New Japan. So they can probably afford him. I don't think at this point in his career, he's going to be that expensive. I'm sure he'll take a bit of a cut in his salary to be, you know, pushed higher on the card and actually be used. I think he'll be like, yeah, I'm going to just jump over if like they're giving him the title. So he knows that they respect him and they, you know, they value, you know, like kind of what he can contribute. And, you know, it's Noah. It's like where all the people, you know, north of 50 go to have a career renaissance these days. So there you go. But any final thought? Oh, so I said to you, I had some thoughts about Keiji Muto
and yes,
the way he's been booked recently. You know, he doesn't lose. He's pushed to the moon. He was GHC champion. He's buried Go Shiozaki. He's buried Kaito Kimi, and he's continually buried this poor young man when he should not be doing this, and he knows better. And I'm thinking, what's the point of all that? Like that makes no sense for him. One win. If he wins one time, but he should have given this young man his like a pinfall victory over him. He should have returned the favor as you should do in professional wrestling to build the future of, and to build this guy to be on a level. You know, and he deserves it because like he's that talented and he's done that much for Noah but I think, you know, Keiji Muto is at a point in his life where he's just like, I need money. And, you know, if you're the champion, like it's not necessarily, you know, like it's kind of a gimmick, but it's like he's probably making more money when he's at the top of the card.
Yeah.
And so he's not losing to anybody because he needs money. I think he needs money probably because he probably lost his shirt when his previous company, the one that he owned, Russell One, just completely flopped after running it for like almost, I don't know, like four or five years.
Yeah.
He just sank money into it. He got sponsors. I'm sure he lost a lot of their money too. So, and then, you know, it failed and he was like, okay, I gotta do indie dates. And then he got the call to come into NOAA because, you know, Nosawa Rangai, the booker at the time, he's probably still the booker. Like, I bet you he's still a fucking booker of this company. Or doing something, at least booking the juniors into oblivion still. But, like, you know, he's a big mark for Muto. So he's like, yeah, come on in. Well, you know, and Sanshiro Takagi, the head of Cyber Fight DDT, you know, like, he seems like he's a mark for Muto too. Like, so, like, Muto could do whatever he wants. And, like, the only reason, like, he would want to have his way is, like, I need to make money because, like, I lost all my fucking money. And this is, again, speculation on my part. But if you were the owner of a company that failed, you probably lost a lot of money. So, and now he's on his retirement tour. Okay, Karen, I don't think he's losing on this retirement tour at all to anyone. I think he's just going to go out. He's going to retire. But, you know, I jokingly say
all he's going to do is win on his way out.
Oh, he's not putting anyone over. And I think there's a very good possibility his last match is for the GHC heavyweight title. And he's going to win and he's going to retire as the fucking GHC title holder. And then they just strip him and then put
then they're going to vacate and have another tournament to figure out.
It'd be like AEW, so much have another work. Tournament, you know, they just another tournament.
So much work.
So, but that's my theory about one, Keiji Muto and the way he's been booked and maybe how his retirement's going to go. So he's not losing. Mark my words.
It was interesting because Tanahashi's like, well, if you're having a set of retirement matches, I want in on that. And I believe I saw somewhere that Muto was like, well, you don't work for NOAA. So if you want to have a match with me, you're going to have to find a way to make it happen. And I'm like,
really? Yeah, well, yeah, you know, Bushiroad, you know, says we'll give you this much money to come do one of your matches on a show. If that happens, and Ed, listen, there's a good chance that might happen. Like, Muto is going to go to do it on a New Japan show. There's no way New Japan is going to let it happen on a NOAA show. They're going to say you can have you get one of your matches.
New beginning 22 in February,
right
before you retire.
But that's where he started. That's where Muto was a star. Like, that's where he became a superstar in wrestling, like, where he built his legend of Keiji Muto and the great Muta was in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I can totally see him, like, just saying to NOAA, hey, I want to do one match in New Japan. In fact, I think he should do two, because the other person he should face is Sanada.
Thank you. I was going to get there.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sanada is his protege, too. Like, Sanada started in All Japan in the Muto era of All Japan Pro Wrestling. And, you know, Sanada went to TNA, did the great Sanada, because it's, you know, it's a tribute. I'm pretty sure TNA was probably like, you know, you're Japanese. Oh, you work for Muta. You should do a Muta gimmick, but we'll call you the great Sanada. So he has a moonsault.
I'm kind of hoping that if they have that match, he comes out as the great Sanada.
I mean,
or a 2022 version of the great Sanada.
It could be the great Sanada versus the great Muta.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's supposed to be one final match of the great Muta.
Yeah. And I can see it being against Sanada, like, cause he does still have a very good relationship with Sanada. So if you ever follow, like, Sanada's Instagram, there's when Muto's been in the hospital, Sanada goes to visit him because
of course he does.
It's his, you know, it's his sensei.
It's yep.
So there he goes. So I think Kojima is very likely. I think Tanahashi is very likely, and I think Sanada is very likely. Kiyomiya is confirmed. I don't know, like, you know, maybe Kenno, maybe he can just bury Kenno on the way to.
Even though Kenno has his passionate, I'm tired of old men getting the belt in this company.
Yeah, that might be a shoot. And Kimura's like, oh, well, I'm going to fucking beat you, you bowl haircutted fuck.
Like that, I don't know. I have to say this much about Kenno. When he, at Cyberfight, when he had his Super Saiyan hair throughout the match, it stayed pretty much in place. And yet, when he came down to challenge Kojima afterwards, he was showered and his hair was blow-dried back forward again.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a helmet. It was like...
I don't know. Like, I remember when I used to, you know, put gel in my hair, and, like, if it was a hot day, like, that was disgusting. Like,
yeah.
So I can only imagine the amount of hairspray gel, whatever the fuck he put in there. Keep it that way, like, the just dripping down your entire body. I bet that shower was the greatest shower that man has probably ever had. But yes, Kenno, have a good match. You're not going to win. But there you go. It should be a nice match.
It makes me so sad because like, oh, it's like it's gonna bury all of your favorites.
I mean like Kojima is gonna beat Keno at Navigation next month in for the JC title. But yeah, if Muto faces Keno, Keno's not winning. Keno's gonna lose. So
what about Shiozaki or Nakajima?
I think Nakajima's too smart to agree to a match with Muto. I don't think they face each other. Right? They haven't faced each other.
Not to my knowledge.
Besides probably Nakajima just saying no. Like he can't even get fucking Hideki Suzuki to agree to lose to him. Like, and I like Hideki Suzuki, like as a wrestler and as a person, because he's very nice to me whenever I met him.
He's lovely.
But that Hideki Suzuki, you cannot, if you're Katsuhiko Nakajima, you can't get Hideki Suzuki to do the fucking job for you. That's all you need to know about like what an insane asylum Pro Wrestling Noah is.
Yeah. And
like who's running it? It's like it's all the Inoki Genome Federation, like adjacent people, like Kendo Kashin and fucking Nosawa Rangai. They won't tell their friends to lose to Nakajima, who's like the I would say the second biggest star in the company. You know? Like it's like if fucking Hulk Hogan said, I'm not losing to The Rock, you know, well, which which is, you know, actually realistic to be, but anyways, that's it for Noah. Any final thoughts about Noah before we move on to New Japan?
I'm enjoying it. I'm keeping an open mind. I'm a little sad that, what was it? Howell lost a match at their junior show that they had yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unclear as to what his status is if he's, he's ditching the name, or if he's becoming a mask man, or if he's going back to his original name before he joined Noah, or if he's going on an excursion somewhere.
I think he's probably going to put, I think he was a mask wrestler before, wasn't he?
I don't know. No. I know there was Alejandro who was also in Congo, but now is also in the Noah Juniors, but it's like, I don't know if they want to make another mask man, but a lot of people are saying like the way he was crying at the, after losing that match, it seemed like he was leaving. Listen, so I don't know. Everyone's like, he's going to New Japan. I'm like, are you sure?
If you're going to get rid of Hao and keep it Tadasuke, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, there, to me, it's like, Hao, upside. That guy's good looking. Like, that guy is so good. It's very talented. Tadasuke, like, terrible. Like not a terrible worker. He's okay. But my God, he's so annoying as a character. And I would take, if I had to choose, I would take Hao over Tadasuke. Cause like, I just hate Tadasuke anyways. Cause like, I hate most of the members of the former Ratels faction.
Oh, was he in Ratels as well?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Fucking Hayata and his stupid fucking vinyl pants. And Yohei's probably the one I like the most. Like, I actually like Yohei. He's a bit crazy, but I actually think he's a pretty good wrestler. His gear's not terrible. Hayata and Tadasuke, I fucking hate those two, you know. But anyways, New Japan Pro Wrestling,
Dominion happened
at Osaka Joe Hall, and I've yet to watch this show. I probably we'll probably get around to watching maybe the I don't know, the Tanahashi Goto match and the
I watched the whole thing minus Tanahashi Goto, Sonata, Ospreay, and the main event on double speed. So like Chris Charlton and Kevin Kelly were speaking like chipmunks the entire time because there was a lot of matches on this card that I don't understand why they were on Dominion when other matches weren't, and why certain people had these matches and other people were left off the card entirely.
All right. Well, I mean, to me, I'm probably just going to watch, probably the Tanahashi Goto match and maybe the main event. Maybe. I don't know. Like, what did you think overall of the show, Karen? And the watches you matched at normal speed.
My thing is that I'm in a point in my life right now, especially in like the summertime, where I want to watch a pay-per-view and I want to be left happy at the end of it. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be frustrated. And lately, you know, between Dontaku and Dominion, it was all Bullet Club everything. And I'm like, do you really not have anything for anybody else?
Well, I mean, my understanding and from like listening to like and reading other people's writings and listening to other podcasts is that the idea is that Ghetto and Jado and Dick Togo are very much into this Bullet Club Civil War, which I don't understand, like who's in the Civil War? Is it like Tamatanga and Tangaloa?
Well, they're not in Bullet Club anymore. They got kicked out.
So where's the Civil War happening? Like, are you expecting fucking Kenny to come back? He's not coming back.
Like, unless they're going to start adding numbers to House of Torture and House of Torture, and it becomes Evil versus Jay. And I know you'll love that. I just don't know where they're going with it. Like, they're adding more people, even more people. They've brought back people.
Yeah.
They're putting the belts on all of them. And for me, it's one of those things where I'm just like, okay, like everyone's like, oh, well, it's from Forbidden Door. It's all about Bullet Club. And I'm like, but Dontaku was literally a month and a half ago, and that's Bullet Club Festival Day. So
it's a terrible idea. Let me just tell you that right now. The Bullet Club has run its course. It's now become NWO Hollywood. That's what it's become. There's no NWO Wolfpack in here. You know. It's just all fucking NWO Hollywood. All
I feel
NWO
like they're trying Ghetto and is trying to book him and Jado in a feud.
Yeah.
And that's what like this whole thing surrounds about. And
it's,
I'm like,
it's narcissistic like booking. Like,
it's just
and it's detrimental to business. I mean, okay, let's just go straight. Like, first of all, let me talk about this tag team title bullshit situation that they took it off Okan and Jeff Cobb in the first place to put it on fucking Chase Owens and Bad Luck Fale. Two wrestlers who, like, I understand why Chase Owens is employed by this company. And people will tell me, you see WCW, they let him in the G1 and they gave him the tag titles as a reward. Listen, him being employed and being a bang average wrestler who has a shit look is reward enough for Chase Owens. He should be like counting his lucky, like his stars that I did them a solid and they will keep me employed for as long as possible, you know, because no one else is going to come calling. You think AEW is going to come calling Chase Owens? No. You think the WWE is going to come calling to Chase Owens? No. New Japan is the only major league that will hire Chase Owens. He did them a solid. Like he did a tour at the last minute for them. So, and hey, that's great. But hey, you don't need to give him positions in the G1. You don't need to give him any titles beyond that. You don't need to give him wins over your fucking stars. Okay. Like just being employed should be enough for this dude. And Bad Luck Fale, listen, Bad Luck Fale, never good. He's worse now. And honestly, that whole debacle where he's wearing that fucking t-shirt, what was it? I don't care anymore. And other podcasters have said this, and I echo the sentiment. If me, I would say we'll keep the relationship with your dojo. Though I don't know who it's produced beyond what Hanari. That's it.
Jay? Oh, Fale Dojo. There was Michael Richards, who was he also went to New Japan for a brief stint as a young lion afterwards, but he's been back in New Zealand since then. They have never brought him back.
So that's kind of the dojo system's kind of useless to them now too. But it's like, I would say, okay, we'll have the relationship with your dojo, but we don't want you as a performer anymore because like, you don't care. You're going to tell everyone, you're going to tell all the fans, you don't care. If you get pinned, you lose. I would never book this guy ever again. Fuck that guy. With that kind of an attitude on my TV. Yeah. That's how I think if I was the bookers of New Japan Pro Wrestling, but United Empire. Anyways, they got the belts back, right? So hopefully they keep them for a while. They don't decide to give it to the Good Brothers or anything like that. That would be even worse. Like, I know that's not worse. That's not worse, but that'd be bad too to put it on the Good Brothers. Like apparently, like Carl Anderson, you know, will put an effort for New Japan, but not for Impact. But they're the Impact Tag Team Champions again, which
they are.
Is insane. That's insane.
And they also made Tama Tonga, a guy who's been there for the last 2 years throughout the pandemic, working hard, a transitional champion, because they put the never open weight on Carl on his first defense, which I don't understand either. I'm like,
well, Tama Tonga's not in the Bullet Club anymore. It's all about the Bullet Club. So, you know.
It's so frustrating because, like, he was one of the guys that he was there. He's been there. And I just disagree with it being all Bullet Club everything, because you're leaving very little for the rest of the roster.
Well, we'll get to that when we get to the G1 here. But, you know, in relevant news for this weekend, Hiroshi Tanahashi did defeat Hirooki Goto to become the challenger against Jon Moxley for the AEW interim title. And my own feelings, and I said this on an appearance on Grapple Spotlight the other week, was that, you know what? Just put it on Tanahashi. Who cares? It's an interim title. Who cares? Because I think the match you want to do is not Moxley versus Punk, per se. You can save that for later on. But I think you should try to do CM Punk versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, and have it for that AEW world title, like when he comes back, because Punk's not been stripped. He's still champion, but this is just the placeholder title. Like, and you can have a placeholder title holder lose matches in the G1 against like certain people that he's facing, you know, like we'll get to the blocks in a second. But anyways, my prediction, Moxley's probably going to win that match, and Tanahashi is going to, you know, come back to Japan, do the G1, and, you know, maybe do the match with Punk in the future. I think that's something Punk would probably push for, to have that match. You know, unfortunately, he got injured, so we were stuck with not stuck. Sorry, I don't want to say that, because I do think this is genuinely a great looking match on paper, Moxley versus Tanahashi. I'm looking forward to watching that match, the very least. But what else happened? Carl Anderson beat Tama Tonga for the never open weight title. Will Ospreay defeated Sonata to become the United States champion. Did they have the title belt, or did Juice not send it back?
No, Juice still hasn't sent it back. He's holding it hostage.
Oh, right. I heard like Will Ospreay was like, where the fuck's my belt? That's pretty Mickey Mouse, by the way. Like, you know.
It's funny that Ospreay's on the other side of that argument now, where Juice is now saying that he's the real champion and Ospreay's the interim champion, even though Ospreay is technically, you know, supposedly the current champion. So it's like he's come like full circle in the course of a year.
Yeah. I think they should, you know, why don't you get the belt back from Juice? I don't know. It could be storyline. Who knows? But there you go. Will Ospreay will be defending that title against Orange Cassidy. I like, we'll talk about that in a second. Like, what the fuck? Anyways, and finally, Jay White defeated Kazuchika Okada by pinfall to become the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion in 36 minutes. Of course, 30 over 30 fucking minutes. Jay White match, you know, there you go.
That match did not need to be over 30 minutes.
It was a lot of match. So, Karen, the idea is like that's being floated out there. Kazuchika Okada is going to be a father soon.
Correct.
Maybe he wants some paternity leave. So let's put it on Jay. I do think that's probably a factor in this, but I also do think because of Forbidden Door, they did not want Kazuchika Okada for whatever reason, because I don't think Jay White's losing the belt to fucking Adam Cole or Adam Page on fucking Forbidden Door. And I don't think they're going to put it back on Okada. So you could have had Okada still be the champion, but I guess, you know, they're going to take it off him. He wants paternity leave, put it on Jay. But I do not think Jay White is going to be the champion going into Wrestle Kingdom, for example. I can see him losing the title to somebody.
Yeah.
Probably Okada again. Like, that's who my guess is going to be. He's going to lose it back to Okada in the fall. And my guess for the main event for night one of Wrestle Kingdom, I guess that's that the more important one. Night two, is that more important? I forget now which one's more important, Karen.
Well, night two is allegedly when you become the real champion to close out the year.
Okay,
so everything you've done up until night one, good job, but you're not done yet. You're the precursor to the final match, the penultimate match to become the man of 2022.
My guess is it's going to be Naito. Like, Naito will recreate his title win from a couple of years ago, and he's going to be the... So I, you know, just to get ahead, jump ahead, I think he's going to win the G1 this year. And I think Okada will probably... Because, I mean, the only thing that makes sense to try to sell as many tickets to Tokyo Dome would be Okada and Naito again. Correct. I don't think, you know, like, Jay White is big enough draw against Naito or Okada to make a massive dent in sales for either Tokyo Dome. Like, I don't think Wrestle Kingdom in of itself is a draw enough for like your walk up fans. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think for people to travel to Tokyo from outside of Tokyo area, if you're coming from Osaka, Fukuoka, Hiroshima, from Hokkaido, you want to see, you know, two people who you consider to be big stars. Like, I think Jay White is considered a big star by most of the New Japan Japanese fans, but I don't think he's considered on the level of Naito or Kazuchika Okada. And that's what I think you need to try to, like, you would think that this is when restrictions are going to be completely lifted. People can cheer. There's going to be no attendance restrictions. And yeah, that they're going to open it up to tourists. You would think that this is, by this time, Japan's going to just say, okay, we need the money. Trust me, they fucking need the money, because, like, Japan's economy is heavily dependent on tourism, you know.
And the yen is exceptionally weak right now. Like, if you want to buy stuff from Japan, now is the time, because the conversion rate is very much in everyone's favor but Japan's.
Yes. So they need tourism. They need to open it up. And, like, Wrestle Kingdom is a great way to, like, kind of just say, okay, this is a great event that brings in a lot of international fans. So I can see, okay, we need Naito versus Okada again. And I think that's my prediction for Wrestle Kingdom. And I think that's going to play into the results of the G1. And like, you know, like, I don't think Jay is anything but a transition champ, because I don't think they're going to risk putting it on a non-Japanese wrestler.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because I think, you know, like, think about this. Like, I think they got burned. I think they thought Kenny was going to stay for a long time because he seemingly loved Japan, you know, like, and he was going to live there forever. No, the money was better somewhere else. The political situation was going to be better somewhere else. So he left. And I think they probably look at Jay White. Realistically, they should think about this as for Jay White as well. Like, Jay White is probably not going to stay in New Japan forever. Like, I do not see him thinking himself, I'm going to be a superstar in Japanese wrestling, you know, because the place you have to go to become a true international multimillionaire superstar in wrestling is America. And now that you have options, you can either go to the WWE or you can go to AEW, and the money will be better for him there. I think he's better. I've always said this about Jay White. I hate the character. I hate the Switchblade character. I hate his promo style in Japan, because it's just him yelling like an ugly foreigner, like a bad tourist. That's his character in Japan. I fucking hate those people. Like, when I live there, the loudmouth, obnoxious tourists were the fucking bane of my existence over there.
Yep, because we would get lumped in with them.
Yeah. So I don't want to see that in my wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, that's like every fucking foreign talent that wrestled for Stardom in the last 4 years was, like, almost had the exact same gimmick outside of Tony Storm, you know? So, like, I was like, if that's your gimmick, I have no interest in watching you wrestle in Japan. Like, think of a different gimmick. So I think at some point Jay White's going to be saying, because I think Tony Khan would be insane not to try to sign Jay White, because he is a perfect American television wrestler. The way he cuts promos and the way he wrestles is perfect for American television.
And he's wildly popular in the American fan base.
Yes. I think, like,
popular.
He knows this. I think he's like, I'm going to jump. When my contract's up, I'm going to go. Like, unless New Japan just parks the yen truck, the bank truck up to my house. But, like, I think Tony's going to, you know, if AEW stabilizes, like, you know, if everything remains the same for AEW, they'll put the money, you know, to Jay White's house. And like, yeah, see, he lives in America, right?
He lives in Florida. So here's the thing about Jay. He's had a very privileged situation in the last 2 years because of his visa status and getting his green card, as they talked about on commentary. He's moved his home base to the United States, and now he's moved to Florida. The thing is that throughout the pandemic, when most wrestlers were going back and forth because he had this immigration situation he was working on, he was almost entirely a US-based wrestler. He was doing AEW, he was doing Impact, he was doing New Japan Strong. And having all of that, plus if you want to tack on the fact that he's a newlywed as well, when you have all that going for you, why are you going to go to Japan for months at a time? When everything, you can go work a couple of shows and be home in your bed 2 nights later or the next day. So it's one of those things where it's just like, he'll be very hard pressed to go there for extended periods of time when he has a happy life here. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where it's just like, unless they start to give him the Kenta treatment, where he comes in not all the time, but some of the time, or he starts to work like a partial schedule where he's not, you know, going there for months and months and months of time, but he's like holding down New Japan Strong. But if his contract comes up, I'm sure with the right number,
he's going to get the right number. He's the most, like, I of all the people who are currently contracted to New Japan Pro Wrestling, like, I would think Tony Khan looks at it and thinks, like, first of all, most of the Japanese talent aren't going to come. They're not going to come. Most of them are going to stay in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Correct. But
most of the foreigners, like, if I look at the foreign talent, the Gaikokujin talent, I look, who does who? If
Thank I'm you Tony for Khan, using Gaikokujin. You know how much I love that.
When I look at that roster, I'm like, no, 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 no. Yes, and that's Jay White. I like, who else would you take from that roster? And you know, you have with Jay White, like, he just looks at the AEW roster. He's like, he's got built-in storylines with Kenny, right then and there.
I think Ospreay would be another one they could eventually earmark for the right number.
Yeah, I do think Ospreay will stay a little longer.
Immediate departure, but I could see him in a couple of years.
He's someone I think who wants that, like, that reign. That like Kenny like reign of having the title, the IWGP title, for a little while.
Yeah.
And kind of proving himself. Also, I think he's kind of a weebo. I don't think Jay's a weebo, you know?
No.
Ospreay is definitely a weebo. Like, so I can see him staying a little bit longer. But yeah, like, if I'm Tony, like, yeah, like White 1A, Ospreay 1B for who I would want to sign to AEW when their contracts come up with New Japan. And I bet you Kenny's probably in, like, fuck yeah, get them both. Like, I can, you know, I get one's someone I got history with. We can make money. Two, the other guy's like another weebo. I can just, we commit, commiserate.
We can make money.
There you go.
Again,
we can hang out.
Love him or hate him, Ospreay also has a lot of high rated matches. And that's one of the things that people have been kind of poo pooing lately with Kenny, well, before he got injured, is that he hasn't been having his regular menu of like 5.5-6-star matches ever since he left New Japan. I feel like him and Ospreay could potentially have that Okada Omega level style match.
Yeah, there's, I have to assume for Ospreay, like, he looks at that AEW roster, he looks at Punk and Danielson and thinks, fuck, I can do so much with those guys, and Moxley again, you know, like, there you go. That's my thing about Dominion, Jay White becoming new champion. He's going to be the transition dude. If he holds it to like the Wrestle Kingdom, I'll be surprised. But if he comes out of Wrestle Kingdom still a champion, I'll be even shocked, because I don't think it's in the cards. Like, I can see him defending it on night one, losing it to maybe Okada, and then it's Naito versus Okada again, like just a repeat of
a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the last time, like that, the last show I actually went to, no, the second last show I went to actually live, which was, you know, Wrestle Kingdom in 2020, 2 years ago, while I was still living in Japan. But let's take a quick look at some of these New Japan road shows. There were two that were held back to back at Korakuen Hall. June 20th, we saw the The AEW All-Atlantic title first round qualifying. Clark Connors defeats Tomoaki Hanma. Oh my God. The other All-Atlantic. By the way, just so people know, Japan is not in the Atlantic Ocean. It's in the Pacific Ocean.
Correct. The LA Dojo is also located near the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, it's on the west coast of America, which is on the Pacific Ocean. Tomohiro Ishii defeated Yoshinobu Kanemaru. I got to think this is like some kind of fucking rib on AEW, on Tony Khan. Yoshinobu Kanemaru and fucking Tomoaki Hanma, like as your qualifying matches? Hilarious.
Well, in Kanemaru's defense, I believe they announced it tonight during Rampage. Him and Despy are going to have a match that got added to the card. And his match with Ishii was actually really good. I enjoyed it. We got serious wrestler Kanemaru. We didn't get...
No, I'm just saying, like, as a name, like, I bet you Tony was like, oh, I thought you were going to put, like, you know, like Tomohiro Ishii versus... Hiroki Goto, you know, something like that.
You just had Goto lose to Tanahashi. We're not gonna do this to him twice.
And Hanma, like, you know, he's on the last leg of his career. And Clark Connors is, you know, LA Dojo, you know, junior dude. Like, these aren't stars, but hey, you know, like the thing is like, you know, Tomohiro Ishii did suffer a knee injury. He did win, by the way, the spot to become All-Atlantic champion at Forbidden Door in a four-way, and he suffered a knee injury.
Did you happen to see his match with Clark?
I haven't watched it. It was a match.
It was a, you know, that like top tier Ishii level, like never open weight style hard hitting. That's what that was, and Clark kept up with him the entire time. Clark could easily go open weight at this rate. Like, it was a great match.
I'm very high on Clark Connors from when, you know, like when I was watching him fairly regularly. I think he's someone they should build the junior division around as, like, you know, like, okay, your top foreign talent that works in the junior division. I think, yeah, I just think, like, you know, like Tony's maybe like, hey, couldn't you put like some bigger names in this thing? But, like, you know, probably could have, but they just didn't want to. But also on that show in the main event, the United Empire of Francesco Akira and TJ Perkins, TJP, defeated 6 or 9, Master Wato and Ryusuke Taguchi. That's a terrible name, by the way.
The 69th reign is officially over.
Yeah.
Just pour one out.
Nah, I'm not. For Master Wato and Taguchi? No. Okay. I'm not wasting the champagne or whatever drink it would be that I'd be pouring one out for.
Beer is usually what it is, like a 40 ounce of beer.
Nah, I'm not pouring out what, like my fucking acai dry, super dry. Fuck that.
Oh, that's hell no. No.
Shit. I'm not pouring that stuff out. Anyways, there you go. New junior heavyweight tag team title holders. It's good. I think it's good because, like, it freshens up the division, and hopefully they actually try to have a division built around this. These guys be the champions. Who knows? Like, it's New Japan. They don't really do too much with their junior tag team titles too much. So, but let's move on. Next day, June 21st. Again, Tomohiro Ishii defeated Clark Connors, but now Clark Connors will be in the match instead of Tomohiro Ishii. Let me just say this, Karen. I have no idea. Like, this is just, again, me speculating wildly here. Like, say a year from now or 2 years from now, it comes out, Tomohiro Ishii just didn't want to go. He said, I have an injury. I would not be surprised.
I mean, in his defense, he has come to the United States a lot since New Japan started sending talent back and forth from Japan.
But those are for New Japan shows, right?
I think he's done an AEW show.
Like, and then
he's done Impact. But I mean, like, he's done a lot more travel than a lot of other people on the roster have.
Maybe he's just sick of it. Maybe he's just like, I don't want to go anymore.
I mean, I wouldn't blame him.
I'm just saying.
There's a little bit of a heat wave in Chicago where it's like 100 degrees right now. I wouldn't want to go to Chicago either.
If that ever comes out, I'm just going to say, on your left, I'm going to take the victory lap on that. But, you know, I take it at face value that he's injured. Hopefully, you know, speedy recovery to Tomohiro Ishii. Get well in time for the G1, you know, which is coming up soon. But also on this one, I got to see this match. I heard it was very good. Taiji Ishimori retained his IWGP Junior Heavyweight title against the 2022 Best of the Super Junior winner, Hiromu Takahashi. But maybe the bigger news, besides the quality of this match, Karen, which you have watched and raved about, is that one Kushida has returned to New Japan as a New Japan Junior. And, you know, I understand perfectly. I think, great, he came back home. I hope he enjoys being a junior again and not ever getting his wish fulfilled, because they could have done it. They could have just stuck him in the G1. But hey, like, that's good. I think it's good. I think he's probably, New Japan is going to be his base. He's still going to live in the United States. He's moving to Los Angeles. Cause probably he's going to be associated, probably get some kind of gig, maybe at the LA Dojo, doing some training maybe, and being more involved with Strong as well. So it's a good fit for him. Like, he still wants to do, you know, wrestling in America, and probably, you know, when he has time, he'll maybe do some indie dates here and there, maybe some spots for Impact or maybe, you know, like, I can see Impact being a place where he would go because of Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, two people he has a good relationship with. But yeah, your thoughts on the return of Kushida and his being returning to the junior division. Do you think it's a good thing for him and for the division?
It was one of those things where I've gone on and on about this for the last, you know, ever since Kushida left, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title has pretty much circulated between three people: Desperado, Hiromu, and Taiji Ishimori, with a very, very, very short stint for Robbie Eagles. So, and the fact that they never pulled the trigger on Show, they never pulled the trigger on Yo. Wato's not there yet. I don't want another Taguchi or Bushi run. It's one of those things where they're running out of options. And now that El Phantasmo's in the G1, I guess he's the next one that's going heavyweight. So it's one of those things where it's like Ishimori literally was about to have, is there nobody else sort of moment. And it was, for me, like, when the first note or two of his music hit, and you could hear the audience trying their hardest not to lose their collective minds, because it was literally, our son is back from the war, he's come home, because people were hoping he would go to Noah, or he'd go to All Japan, or he would go to AEW or Impact. And what I liked about it was that it seems like what Kushida said on social media since then, and in the backstage comments, that it was his decision to leave his, like, he did WWE, he got as far as they were going to let him, and he's put that chapter of it behind him. But he's choosing to remain based in the United States. Moving to LA is better because LA has a larger Japanese community, so it's better not just for him, but for his family. And it's also a direct shot to Japan. He doesn't have to transit through Atlanta, Minneapolis, Detroit. Because from Orlando to Japan, it is flight time alone, it averages about 17 hours. That doesn't include transit time, layovers, lost baggage, whatever. And especially in the summertime, flying in and out of Florida is a nightmare because of summer vacation. But anyway, so being based in LA, possibly working regularly with the LA Dojo and New Japan Strong is awesome. If he's going to take the approach where he still wants to do his, like, King of the Indies tour, kind of like how Minoru Suzuki does when he's here, he could go to GCW, he could go to Warrior Wrestling, he could go to all of the places all over the country that are having all this great wrestling. He could go to the UK if he wanted to, because I think there's a direct flight to Heathrow from LA. So it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like he's worked out an agreement with New Japan that is mutually beneficial, that, you know, they need to fix the junior division again. So they have him, he's a good hand, but is he going to get another run with the title? I don't think so. I mean, personally, I hope that he doesn't get the title, and that he's like, well, in that case, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to go and he can fight Tom Lawler or Fred Rosser for the Strong Openweight Championship. He can go for the Never Openweight Championship. If they're not going to put him in the G1, and that's when I was hoping, when they did the announcements, that that's how they were going to announce that he was coming back. I mean, this was also really great. And now it made more sense why both of the junior title matches were left off of Dominion. But at the same time, I still felt like those matches could have still made Dominion a more competitive show with Cyber Fight, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if this is what Kushida wants, is if this is all his choice, then as a fan, I'll support it. If he's getting paid, his family's taken care of, and he's doing the wrestling, even if it's junior heavyweight, if that's what he wants, then fine.
Yeah, maybe like, you know, when Jiro gets let go by the WWE, eventually he'll go to New Japan. Because I don't want him going to All Japan again. I don't want him like ruining the other promotion I actually like watching. It's Jiro. Go to New Japan. Like I think actually they would probably take him, you know, Jiro. I can see them taking him, you know.
As long as they don't put him in Bullet Club.
No, I think they probably
I don't want to see a Bullet Club version of Ikemen Jiro.
I think they probably put him in Chaos and pair him with Yano. Or pair him with Kushida, reform.
Jacket Time?
Was it Time Jacket or Jacket Time?
Jacket Time.
All right, yeah, reform Jacket Time. I can see them doing that. Jiro to New Japan. Manifested.
Not confirmed.
You know, I'm trying to manifest this because I don't want to see him go back to All Japan Wrestling. Are you going to Noah? I don't give a shit if he goes to Noah, to be honest with you. Right now, Dylan Fox is like, no, not Noah. And I bet if the Super J Cast guys are listening, not fucking New Japan. We don't want fucking Jiro at New Japan. But like, anyways. Or Jiro just stays in NXT forever. That's fine. I'm fine with that too. Like
the way that they've painted NXT 2.0 as more of a plucky character driven, not so much wrestling driven. He can wrestle, but if he's going to get paid what the base salary of a PC recruit is, like what, 50 grand, 50 grand to just, yeah, pardon my language, fuck around in his jacket and have a good time. Sure. Why not? I'll mess around for 50 grand and, yeah, just be a clown. That's fine. Hey, it's more than I make in my actual job. So, listen, I mean, Jiro, you can't be mad at it.
Jiro just has to like do the mirror gimmick and like the jacket stuff and jump in and out, have like a 15 minute fucking entrance. And he's set, you know, like maybe if, you know, Vince survives this whole scandal thing, which, you know, let's be honest, he probably will, because he's Vince. Cause he's fucking Vince McMahon. He's, you know, he's got Teflon. Like hey, here's my thing. I hope he gets fucking ousted. I hope the shareholders say, we need to sell this fucking company. We need you gone for that. And they sell it, not to Disney. I don't want fucking Disney to buy it, by the way. I want like fucking NBC. You can fucking buy it and just put it on fucking Peacock permanently.
Ugh, Peacock.
And just take it off of fucking, take SmackDown off of Fox or whatever. Anyways, that's here there. But yeah, maybe if Vince survives all this and he like really takes a close look at Jiro and says, yeah, I like this guy. Let's fucking keep this guy in this fucking jacket. Let's give him the North American title. That's, you know, that's my dream.
They're going to make him NXT champion. Just do it. Do it.
Listen, you know, who's Tony D'Angelo and fucking Jiro?
I don't even know anymore. I'm not keeping up with NXT. I just got too mad at it. I was mad at it all the time.
It's great. It's great. All that stuff. It's amazing. My sarcasm is showing through. Anyways, let's move on. We're sticking with New Japan. Karen, you know what's coming up soon? It's summer season. In a couple of weeks, we're going to see the beginning of the G1 Climax. And they announced the 28 participants of this year's tournament, and they announced all four blocks. And so like, let's go through each block, and that's how we're going to go through the participants. And you know what? They did a great job for us by basically putting probably the likely block winners as the center picture of each block graphic.
Correct. You know?
So let's look at block A. Of course, the top seed, probably the most likely winner of block A is Kazuchika Okada. Joining him in block A is Toriano, a perennial favorite, not of me per se, but of like, you know, Wei and John like Toriano and understand.
His matches end up being short. So you know what? I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, no, like I understand. He's a night off, right? It's a night off. So it's fine. Toriano, Jeff Cobb, you have to forgive me. Is this his first G1?
No, Jeff Cobb almost won the G1 last year.
That's right. Okay.
So he set the record for consecutive wins in the G1 with like running the table up to 8 and then losing.
You got to forgive me. I have not paid close attention to New Japan.
It could have been the Jeff 1 last year, my friend. It could have been the Jeff 1.
Could have been. So this is his second year.
This is second or third, because I think he did one before he joined the United Empire.
Oh, you're right. I think yes. Okay. So anyway, Jeff Cobb coming back, that's fine. Lance Archer making his New Japan return to a very loud reception by the fans when they announced his name. The only contracted AEW wrestler to be part of the G1. Bad luck Fale, bad match Fale. The debuting. Two debuts here, Karen. Tom Waller, the current New Japan Strong Openweight Champion, and also fresh from NXT, WWE, and been working the indies. The former, what's his name in NXT? Bronson Reed. Former Jonah Rock. Now just Jonah. By the way, that's dumb. Like, get the Rock back or get a last name. Jonah by itself, I don't get it. I'm not a fan of one name wrestlers if it is just a plain first name. Jonah, I don't get it.
I couldn't provide you an answer as to why he picked just Jonah. Maybe he wants to be like Cher, I don't know.
Anyways, by the way, Jonah does have is a proud owner of the original Long and Winding Royal Road pillar.
Is he?
Yes, he contacted us and said, hey, I like that shirt. So we sent him one. So my dream, Karen, is that Jonah will wear that shirt on one of these shows.
I don't know if he ever comes out to the ring wearing a t-shirt, though. That's the thing. You might catch him like when he finally gets over there or back over there.
No, I want to see him do like, you know, like he's not wrestling. I want to just see him like walking around Corican Hall behind.
I want to
see him walking behind Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton wearing that shirt.
He'd be like,
it'd be funny. I would think that was really funny. Anyways, Block A, to me, best block. The only downside to this block is Fale, but it's seemingly designed. Each block is designed to have at least one really terrible wrestler to bring things down, to just not to give the fans a perfect block. So Bad Luck Fale, I don't know why he's back in here. I don't know why there's 28 fucking people in this thing, Karen. Like you could have willed it down to 24 and saved yourself like some really bad matchups. Okada versus Yano, be fun. Okada versus Cobb should be good. Okada versus Archer, yeah, I think it'll be fine. Okada versus Fale, you know, he'll have his Miracle shoes on to carry Fale. I don't even know if he's gonna have he's going to be able to do that with Fale. I mean, he's so terrible now. But Okada versus Lawler.
That's the match.
Let's see.
Yes.
Lawler versus Toriano. This is apparently a dream match of Tom Lawler's.
So, really?
Yes. Because he, Tom Lawler does have kind of a sense of humor. He likes to do the comedy. If you ever seen and even some of his matches on the indies, like he does like to do comedy. So like, yeah, he's really wants to do a Toriano match. So that should be fun. And then Okada versus Jonah should be good. I think Jonah's a good worker. So that's I don't see too many bad matchups here, to be honest. Lawler versus all these guys, except for Fale, should be good.
I agree.
Shall we move on to Block B?
Let's go.
All right, current IWGP World Heavyweight Champion Jay White, Taichi, Tama Tonga, Tomohiro Ishii, Sonata, Great O'Khan, and the melted butter wrestler Chase Owens are like he's your requisite candidate in this block. But this is a solid block. I'm not a huge, people know I'm not a huge fan of Jay White, but I think he'll, you know, he'll hopefully not have 30 plus minute matches in block B, but like, I think there's like, you know, the, you know what I want to see? I kind of want to see Great O'Conn versus Jay White. I want to see what that's going to look like. I think it'll be, I don't know if it'll be good, but I think it'll be interesting.
I'm kind of indifferent to Jay White right now. Like, I know that the Japanese fans are excited to see him wrestle again, but it's always when someone's a champion in the G1, I'm just kind of like, how many losses are they going to realistically let this person drop? So it's kind of eh for me. I'm just not.
The person I see him.
I could be singing a different tune in a couple of weeks, but right now I'm not gassed about it. I'm not excited.
I think the most likely people he's going to lose to set up title matches are probably Tomohiro Ishii. I can see them giving him a title shot between the end of G1 and Wrestle Kingdom, and Sonata. I can totally see Sonata getting a win over Jay White to set up a title challenge that he won't win. But there you go. I think this is not a super offensive, but I think it's kind of an average block. That's just for me. Ishii elevates it. Like, I think Sonata is also someone who will, you know, like, I think motivated Sonata can have some really good matches, but like, I don't know how motivated he's going to be with some of these other people in the block. But Ishii should have, like, I think, you know, like, Tamatanga's doing pretty good as this new babyface Hontai member. So Ishii versus Tamatanga, I think, has potential to be a very, maybe one of the standout matches in this block.
My thing about Sonata in the G1 is that if, like, he started the year off strong, taking the U.S. championship off of Tanahashi, and then he unfortunately got injured, and they brought him back to put him in a match to have him lose to Ospreay. So I feel like if Sonata doesn't advance at least to the finals or the semifinals, what are they doing with him? Is this another situation where he's going to be the bridesmaid but never the bride again?
He's the new Hiroki Goto.
I hate that for him.
I unfortunately, like, I used to be very, very, very high on Sonata when he first came into the company. I was actually a big fan of his in All Japan and Wrestle One, and I thought, yeah, like, he's got so much potential. He's got the look. He's good, motivated. He's very, very great wrestler, I feel like. I don't know. Recently, I'm kind of like off the kind of bandwagon of Sonata, but like, I kind of feel like you do. Like, I think it's going to be very telling, like, how far he gets in his block and in the tournament as a whole. Because if he doesn't do anything significant in this tournament, like, I think the kind of the writing's on the wall for him for the foreseeable future, until like some people leave the company and then they feel, okay, well, we let's give Sonata the push. But right now, I think he's just kind of like slotted in the role that he's in. But let's move to block C. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Tetsuya Naito. Now, like, I think, you know, probably it's my guess is Naito is going to be the block leader.
Yeah.
Block C. But Tanahashi is going to be in there. Joining them is Evil. Oh, well. Hiroki Goto, Zack Sabre Jr., Kenta, and Aaron Henare. Evil being the kind of the low point of this block. Actually, I think this is a pretty, pretty interesting block. I think it's a do or die for Henare. Like, I'm actually quite happy to see him finally get his shot to be in the G1. I think this should have happened 3 years ago, to be honest with you. But like, he's really lucky. I think he's going to have some really like good matches with people who can like bring out the best in like his style. And that's like Goto, Naito, and Tanahashi. I don't see, honestly, Evil versus anyone is just going to be House of Torture garbage. I'm not looking forward to any of them. I probably will skip probably almost all Evil matches unless someone says, actually, Evil versus Kenta was good. Probably that's going to be the worst match, is Evil versus Kenta in this block. But how do you feel about block C, Karen?
I mean, I had high hopes for Naito winning the G1 last year. So if And if there are rumors about him choosing to retire after he turns 40 are to be believed, he turned 40 2 days ago. So this could be the Naito's last stand to win the G1 and or main event Wrestle Kingdom and or become IWGP World Heavyweight Champion before he retires.
Yeah, because I do think, like, he's not someone who just says things like that. Like, I'm going to retire.
Exactly.
Like, I think he has the conviction to, like, kind of, like, say things and then, like, actually live up to them. I can see, like, New Japan, like, thinking, okay, if he's retiring, we're going to bleed this stone dry, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they're going to give him the big push. And again, I think him going for the title again, especially if it's against Okada, is the match that will draw the most for New Japan Wrestle Kingdom weekend. So that's my guess. So I do think Naito is going to eke out the the points to become Block C a leader here. And then let's finally go to Block D. We have the current United States champion, Will Ospreay. His greatest rival since turning heavyweight, and that's Shingo Takagi. Like, and there you go. Like, that's the match of this block and possibly of the whole tournament, Karen. Like, I am very much looking forward to seeing Will Ospreay versus Shingo Takagi again. Joining them is Juice Robinson, Yoshihashi, the debuting El Phantasmo. Again, I do not know why El Phantasmo and not El Desperado or Hiromu Takahashi. Doesn't make any sense.
Or Kushida.
Or Kushida. Yujiro Takahashi. Really? Yujiro Takahashi and not fucking Hiromu or fucking Kushida. Oh my God. David Finlay rounds things out. I'm a big fan of David Finlay, but I do not see him gaining more than two or three points in this thing. Like, I can see him having a draw with somebody. Maybe I can see him being a spoiler for somebody.
Yeah.
But I do not see him getting a lot of points. But what I do see for David Finlay is showing, like, his worth. Cause I think when he's given opportunity to have a spotlight on him, he does kind of shine through, and I'm very happy for him. I've been a big fan of his for pretty much since he debuted in the company back in one of the best of the super juniors. Again, like, I'm not that excited about that. Ospreay versus Takagi is the big one, but Ospreay against everyone else is like, okay. Takagi against, like, anyone else. Meh. Okay, like, you know, Takagi against Finlay, I'm excited about that. Robinson, I don't give a shit about Juice. I have not given a shit about Juice Robinson in like 4 years, you know. Like, he's hit his thing, and now that he's like doing the Aces and Eight gimmicks as a Bullet Club member, I care even less about Juice Robinson. Like, whatever. I think it's either Ospreay or Takagi who's gonna go through to the semis. My grand prediction is Naito. I think is it going to be Block C versus Block D winner?
I'm guessing that's how they're doing it. It's going to be A, B, C, and D.
Yes. I'm looking at So A1, B1 will determine who's the
finalist.
Yeah. The finalist, and C versus D will determine the other finalist. Okay. So my guess. This is my guess. Okay, so A block winner, Okada. B block winner, I'm going to go off left field here. I'm going to say Great O'Conn. I think he's just going to eke out. Someone's going to spoil Jay White.
I'm hoping Tama Tonga is the one that spoils Jay. I think their match is the last one on the block, the last of the days for that block.
Right. So I can see that. Tama Tonga spoils Jay White, and then Great O'Conn goes through.
Advances.
To the semifinals against Okada, which Okada will win, I think. Great O'Conn could win. Great O'Conn could win that. I think because they're going to push this guy. They're going to make him a main eventer in this company, and this is probably a great time to start.
Do it.
So pull the trigger on the start of his push to the top of the company. Okay, Block C, I think it's Naito.
Yeah.
And Block D, I'm going to say Shingo Takagi, because they're going to do Naito versus Shingo.
Well, because they were supposed to do that last year during the G1 before Naito's knee got blown out, right?
Right. I think they're going to do it. I think C and D, Naito versus Shingo. My God, that everything being okay with both guys, that should be an awesome match. So Okada versus Okan. Okan goes through. Naito versus Shingo. Naito goes through. It's going to be Tetsuya Naito versus Great Okan in the goddamn finals of the G1, and Tetsuya Naito will win and get that briefcase and not put it up. Like, I think Naito should just say, I'm not putting this up. I'm keeping it. And I'll tell you when I'm going to fight, you know, for it. And then, you know, I think Kazuchika Okada in between the end of the G1 before Wrestle Kingdom will defeat Jay White again to become
probably a King of Pro Wrestling,
probably to become the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. You build towards Okada versus Naito to try and sell as many tickets as you fucking can for Wrestle Kingdom. Yeah. So anyway, dude, what, how about you? Would you have any wild predictions, Karen, for the G1? Excuse me.
No, I really don't. Like, I feel like the predictions you went were pretty much the ones that I would have gone with as well. I'm still salty that they didn't pull the trigger on Zach and Jeff Cobb last year. So I would love to see one of them make it, but at the same time, now that the all the other foreign guys are back, I don't see them getting that rub anymore. Zach just won the New Japan Cup for the second time earlier this year.
I don't think the G1's in his future this year. And maybe in the future, like, depends what they do with him, like the start of, you know, from now until, like, you know, the start of the New Japan Cup next year. Like, he might be in his place. Like, I think that, you know, at some point he has to leave Suzuki Gun. I think him and Suzuki have to have a falling out and have to have a match.
Yeah.
And there you go. Anyways, what else do we have? New Japan and Stardom. Let's talk about that. So they announced a joint show that's going to happen in November, correct?
November 20th at the Ariake Arena.
Have you ever been to the Ariake Arena?
Nope. It was being built for the 2020 Olympics when we went back in 2020, but I had never been to it before then.
Oh, so I guess I meant, have you been to Ariake Coliseum? Which was
I have not.
It's a nice building. It's for tennis, I think. It's got amazing air conditioning. I'll tell you that. That's how I judge most buildings in Japan, is how good the air conditioning is.
Well, air conditioning is very essential, especially in the summertime.
Not so much for November. It should be actually quite comfortable in November, but Ariake area is kind of boring. I will say that. But it's kind of the home of Noah. That's where, you know, Ariake Coliseum and different Ariake, where it was the offices and dojo of Pro Wrestling Noah back in the day. But what kind of, like, I guess they're gonna do some mixed tags.
They're hinting at mixed tags. At the press conference, if I remember correctly, Tanahashi hinted that him and Mayu could potentially tag together. They asked Starlight Kid, but she's like, should I say it now or say it later? And then, like, later, she got told to say it later when all the press was interviewing her, that she expressed interest in tagging with Desperado. And then later on, after, like, in the same week, Utami also got interviewed, and she said she wanted to tag with Okada and have somebody tag with Naito in the opposite corner. And Kidani suggested that there might be two or three mixed tag matches.
Right.
So that's already three sets. So that leaves us with three more sets to wait and find out.
So if Naito's on one of the sets, like, who do you think is the natural?
Julia. Yeah.
That's what I think too. I think like Dana Del Mundo is like,
I wouldn't put Shuri with him. I don't know who I would put. I would put Shuri with Shibata if they'd let Shibata do one, but I don't think he'd want to do one. Julia with Naito would probably be the most organic pairing.
I think there's, you can draw a lot of parallels between DDM and LIJ.
Yeah. I can see Taichi tagging with Tam Nakano.
Poor Tam. I can see him.
He made her cry. So
I can see her. I can see him harassing her. No, I'm just kidding. Well,
now.
Am I? I don't know. Allegedly. But yeah, no. So if they do these mixed tags, so does that mean, like, say, you know, Julia tags in and Tanahashi's in the ring, do they fight?
It sounded like it was going to be mixed tag, meaning that it would automatically swap to the other person. But those are WWE rules for mixed tag. I don't know how they're going to handle intergender.
Yeah, because there's no stigma really about intergender in Japan.
No, there isn't. I mean, would I love to see Julia drop Kazuchika Okada on his head? Sure, why not? Or to see Utami try to kick Naito, who she's been a fan of since, you know, she was in junior high school. So it's one of those things, like, I don't want to get my fantasy booking, like, chart out just yet, but it's one of those things, like, it will break my heart if I cannot get into the country to see this show live. Because I as much as I love Wrestle Kingdom, and, you know, Stardom's usually, you know, their end of the year show was phenomenal last year. I can only imagine how good it's going to be this year. This is the show I feel a more dire need to go to. The problem is the weekend before Thanksgiving, which is one of the most expensive times to fly in the United States.
Right. Well, like, cross your fingers for you, Karen, like, that you can somehow get in there. Hey, you should talk to Rossi Ogawa. Maybe you can uncover who choked him out in that YouTube video.
I know. I'll have to watch and see, put my little thinking cap on. But knowing Kamatani, she might say it by accident during the five-star Grand Prix presser like she usually did last year.
Can only hope.
We can only hope.
But yeah, like, outside of possibly these intergender mixed tag matches, like, what kind of, like, are your thoughts about what the rest of the card might be like?
I feel like it, like all of the other crossover shows they've had, it'll be a lot of multi-person matches. I think the goal will probably be to have as many people on the card as possible.
Do you see?
I think there's going to be Oedo Tai versus, like, House of Torture. I don't think so.
I would imagine, like, maybe you'll have these mixed tag matches, like, maybe three, as that they've been.
Like, you can do an eight person if you want to do, like, two and two, like, two guys, two girls.
Yeah, but I think maybe it'll, like, you know, the rest of the card will be just, like, you know, Stardom versus Stardom.
Yeah.
New Japan versus New Japan, men versus men, women versus women.
Yeah. I don't know if they have title matches on it, though. That would be the only thing.
I would think that they're going, like, to have
one or two, maybe.
Yeah. Like, maybe for the world of Stardom, maybe the Wonder of Stardom, maybe for New Japan, maybe an IWGP world title match, maybe a junior heavyweight title match. It depends, like, how important, because we have to keep in mind, like, though they're owned by the same parent company, they're separate, like,
correct, you
know, like, New Japan can decide, like, we don't want to have a world heavyweight title match on the show, we're gonna have a United States heavyweight title match on the show. Same with Stardom, they can decide we're just gonna have an SWA title match on this show.
It's also literally, like, 6 weeks, if not less, before Wrestle Kingdom. So you can't really, I mean, you could do a title defense if instead of what they would do at the usual November pay-per-view. But I feel like King of Pro Wrestling is, like, right before that in October. If that's the tour that they're going to go with. I just feel like it would be cutting it too close. But I don't remember how late the briefcase and or the championship gets defended on the road to Wrestle Kingdom proper.
Usually I think it's like October, November.
Yeah, because I know usually that's also when that's when they're ready to do World Tag League.
Yeah.
Is end of November, beginning of December.
Yeah. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. Yeah. We'll keep tabs on how this card shapes up as you know, as summer progresses. And I think probably won't hear too much until probably the beginning of fall.
I think we have to get past the G1 and the 5-star Grand Prix before they start throwing out, because, you know, they love to hold those cards close to the chest as long as possible. So I also don't think they want to announce anything too early in case, God forbid, somebody gets injured. So, but they'll just keep dangling little bits of information here and there.
We'll find out soon enough, I'm sure.
Yep.
Let's jump over to the big event of this weekend, Karen, and that's the AEW/New Japan Pro Wrestling Supercard.
Are we going through the forbidden door, WH?
We're
going
to talk about the forbidden door. And I'm not going to say anything about the build that hasn't already been said by tons of other people. It's been pretty bad, you know, like who's fighting on this? Oh, by the way, Kazuchika Okada is going to be on the show in a four-way that's not announced when he comes up, but has to be explained by Excalibur later on in another segment. Oh, yeah. By the way, it's going to be a four-way. But let's just go, kind of go through the matches and we just talk about what we're going to be seeing on the show, which I will be watching with at my friend Mike Murray's house. I'm going to be traveling all the way out to Scarberia, aka Scarborough, for people who actually live in the GTA. And he said we're going to have kebabs and maybe some other food there. So I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds nice.
So I'm going to be looking at the Wikipedia page for Forbidden Door. And on the buy-in, the pre-show, there's going to be an 8-man tag team match. Max Caster and the Billy Gunn and his progeny, Austin Gunn and Colton Gunn. Are these their real fucking names? Austin and Colton?
I don't keep up with the Gun Club or the Ass Boys or whatever they're calling themselves these days.
Listen, I'm going to just say this right now. No one should be naming themselves Austin in wrestling anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
Like, there is only one Austin and there can only be one Austin for the next 20 years, and that's Steve Austin. Everyone else seems just like, yeah, Austin Aries, Austin Gunn, Ace Austin, Austin A, where the fuck his name is. Like, yeah. What was his fucking name? Austin Theory? Like, all these
He's just Theory now, apparently. Right.
But no more Austins anymore. If you're thinking, I was like, you know what? I'm going to call
no more Austins, Austin. No more Aces.
No more. Yeah. No more Aces either. Like, seriously. It's so unoriginal. Think of something new, people, for God's sakes. No more Austins, no more Aces. Anyways. This Caster and the Gun Club will take on Yuya Uemura, Al Coughlin, the DKC, and Kevin Knight. So it's Mass Caster and the Ass Family against the LA Dojo. I think this should be just a short, fun, let's hit all our spots kind of a match that goes like maybe 6 to 8 minutes. And it'll be inoffensive and fine. What do you think, Karen?
I want to see Alex Coughlin deadlift Billy Gunn and just launch him across the ring.
Yeah,
that's all I want in that match.
Billy Gunn is a lot bigger than I used when I first saw him. Like, yeah, taking on like against Tanahashi, I was like, this guy's huge. He because yep. Like in WWE, he's average size. Yep. Like compared to like you know people like The Undertaker and Triple H and The Rock and things like that. But this man is massive. If you compare him to like actual like not normal size people but like smaller than him, right? I couldn't believe it. But anyways, yeah, let's see the android Alex Coughlin deadlift Billy Gunn and throw him into the third row. That'd be in Chicago. That'd be awesome. Anyways, so let's start maybe at the bottom here. Singles match, Zack Sabre Jr. versus TBA. And Karen, your guess is to TBA, because this will be the newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club. I have my theories. What's your theory?
There are two choices I have. Oh, excuse me. Two choices I have as I go through puberty, apparently. One would be Claudio Castiglione. Mm-hmm. The other would be Chris Hero.
Okay.
Chris Hero is doing a signing across the street at Warrior Wrestling the same day. I know... But it's one of those things that's like, I don't know if he's just doing more appearances and coaching seminars in his podcast or if he's actually wrestling.
I never see anything about him wrestling, like getting into the ring.
Well, that's the thing is that he's been very adamant about that he's been floated many offers, but the right offer hasn't come along.
Right.
So when I think of people that Daniel Bryan could theoretically trust to replace him or fill that spot, there's only two people I can think of are him and Claudio.
Right.
But that's only because the selfish part of me wants the reunion of, you know, the Kings of Wrestling and having them go to the World Tag League and go to Japan again. But more realistically, it's probably Claudio just because he says he's working out for like some like streamer showdown thing. But I'm just like, you don't need to work out that much to like go fight some streamers. Come on now.
I, I think it'll be Claudia, because the way Bryan Danielson like kind of hyped his replacement.
Yeah.
I like Chris Hero, but I don't think Chris Hero is a name big enough to satisfy most fans, because I do think most fans aren't super familiar with Chris Hero, to the extent that they are familiar with the former Cesaro, probably going back to his original name of Claudio Castagnoli. Yes, you have a point.
When we're finished talking about this match, because they've added two other matches to the undercard for the buy-in.
Sure. Okay. So
I guess I just pulled up Wikipedia, so they may have updated it since you last opened it.
My point being, I think it's Claudio, because like he's the bigger name. I think he would fit the aesthetic of the Blackpool Combat Club.
Absolutely.
He's got that connection with Regal. And so does Chris Hero, by the way. He has that connection when they were in FCW, NXT, original NXT. So could be either. Yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, it's either one of those two, but I think it's probably Claudio. And probably Chris Hero is going to be maybe brought in. Like, honestly, AEW is so overflowing with people. Like, I think it would be bad for Chris Hero to come in, because I think he'd get lost in the shuffle.
I just want them to give him the playbook and let him run Ring of Honor. Like, just give Chris Hero Ring of Honor, let him just do all that. Like, because that's what he was doing before Ring of Honor went through its restructuring, is that he was helping with them do that. So let him do that again and make new generations of wrestlers.
Make it maybe like, you know, Chris Hero's contributions aren't in the ring anymore. Maybe they're like with a pencil.
That's fine.
There you go. Like, he is one of the smartest people in wrestling.
He is a wrestling genius.
He is. Okay, so let's talk about these new matches that they just announced. Karen, what are they?
They added The Factory, featuring QT Marshall and Aaron Solo, against Chaos's own Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi in a tag match.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
And then the third buy-in show match is Swerve in Our Glory, which is Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee versus El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. I'm guessing these two last matches were announced during Rampage tonight.
Okay, so Desperado, Kanemaru are going to lose. Keith Lee's going to probably powerbomb Kanemaru.
And or throw him into the fifth row. Just yeet him out of the ring.
Swerve and Keith Lee are going to win that match. And what was the other? Oh yeah, the factory's losing. That's how it's good. That's how it would be. Like you, QT Mar, fuck this QT Marshall. QT Marshall is going to fucking lose. All right, he's going to fucking this other fucking guy I'd have never seen.
Russell. Aaron Solo.
I don't even fucking know who he is. He's going to fucking lose to. Who are they? Goto
and Yoshihashi.
Yoshikiroshi on fucking Aaron Solo, who I don't even know what the fuck he looks like. There you go. And by the way, we're going to talk a bit about the politics probably of this fucking mess, this on paper mess. I do think, I will say this, Karen, I think when I'm watching this show, I think I'll probably enjoy it, but the build has been shit. On paper, this is so disappointing, but I think the actual show itself will probably be fun to watch and I'll probably enjoy it, especially if there's K-pops that I'm going to be eating at the same time.
The approaches that I'm taking with this whole show is that I think of it more of remember when Ring of Honor used to do their global wars and the war against of the world series, and they would only bring over a fraction of the roster to participate in those shows. That's the vibe I have of this. It's not so much Madison Square Garden G1 Supercard. It's more War of the Worlds ROH television pay-per-view sort of vibe to it. Am I wrong? Yeah.
No, I think you mentioned that to me like earlier in the week in DMs, and I was like, that's what this is. It's a fucking global war show. But the thing is like, here's the thing. I think like AEW is New Japan in this equation, and New Japan is fucking Ring of Honor in this equation, because, you know, like the perception now is that, you know, 3 years ago, New Japan was the number two company in the world.
Yeah.
Now the perception is, and probably rightly so, because I, just because like you know, in this case, like, we're talking from our perspective as Western fans, Karen, not from the Japanese perspective.
Correct.
That AEW is the clear number two behind WWE, with the, not so much the amount of money they have, but the amount of press they get and the amount of praise that's heaped on them by the wrestling media and by wrestling fandom as a whole. So I think
that also has to do with how accessible the companies made themselves to the press and the fans, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, sure. New Japan has always kept a very like literally a 6-foot pole in between them and the fans and the media in particular. Whereas, you know, AEW, you know, literally every time they have a pay-per-view, they're having a media scrum, or if they have a really good Wednesday night show, they have a media scrum, and they invite anyone regardless and within that is in wrestling media and or a content creator to participate in those. And as well as the phone calls, the open calls that, you know, for media and stuff like that. So they've made themselves as a company far more accessible. Therefore, the people who are covering their events are able to heap on more praise because they have more access to the company, if that makes sense.
No, I totally think that. I just think, you know, the why I'm saying, hey, you know, New Japan is the, you know, ROH in this is because, like, you know, I think like Tony Khan and AEW are able to dictate terms.
Yes.
Like of,
I absolutely agree.
Who's like, you know, New Japan says, we want this to happen. And if Tony Khan does not want it to happen, he says, if he doesn't like that idea, he's going to say no. Whereas like Ring of Honor would be like, yes, can I have some more, sir?
Yeah.
We want this person to win over you, one of your biggest stars. Okay.
You know, sure.
That's what would happen, you know, for the most part, not always, but for in large part, New Japan dictated the outcome of matches. Whereas like, I think Tony Khan can dictate because this is an AEW show for the most part.
Yes.
It is an AEW show that New Japan is participating in.
Correct.
That I would assume New Japan is getting maybe part of the gate. You know,
I should hope so.
That New Japan, like, because you can, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can, if you're in Japan, the way you watch this in Japan is you buy it via New Japan World as a separate cost on
Correct.
Top of your monthly fee, right?
They started introducing a pay-per-view structure into New Japan World. They started it with I believe it was not the Noah show, but they had another show. They did Takataichi Mania and they did it that way. So if you're in Japan proper, you can order it that way. In the United States, you have to use Bleacher Report, or if you use a VPN, you can order it through Fight for $10 cheaper.
Yeah. So
which I may or may not have done.
I think in Canada, I think we're just Fight TV. I think.
Yeah, because Bleacher Report is $50, but Fight was $39.
Just order through Fight if you can.
I did.
To anyone watching this, like, fuck Bleacher Report. Like, did you charge $10? Why? Just charges the same fucking price.
Like, it's one of those things where just like, I was excited about the show when they announced it, but then when they started announcing the card, I'm like, this is not a $50 pay-per-view. I'm sorry.
No. It's not. And let's continue anyways. next match, Bullet Club, El Fantasmo, Hikuleo, and the Young Bucks, who aren't officially part of the Bullet Club, but they're teaming with the Bullet Club members. We'll take on Sting's new version of the Dudes with Attitudes, Darby Allin, Sting, of course, and from LIJ, Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi. Why not just have Hiromu Takahashi fight fucking Darby Allin in a singles match? Or apparently, like, Shingo was like, me and Hiromu want to fight the Young Bucks. We don't want to fucking fight Hikuleo or El Fantasmo. We want to, hey, listen, Shingo Takagi and Hiromu just straight tag against the Young Bucks? Fuck, why not? That'd be awesome.
They were tag champions together, so why not?
You know, Takahashi, you know, Hiromu Takahashi against Darby Allin. Of like two like people who don't give a shit about their own bodies? Yeah, why not?
I feel like they were just trying to put as many people on this show as possible.
It's fucking stupid. Like, honestly, I'm sure this will be fun, but like I just came up with two better matches right there, Karen. You know?
And they did zero buildup. They were just like in a backstage segment, and Sting and Darby Allin are like, oh yeah, we're going to have Shingo and Hiromu as if they'd known them their whole entire lives. Like no introduction for the AEW fans as to who, like, I feel like AEW is making assumptions that their wide populace is very read into New Japan when they're not.
No, I don't think so either. Next, AEW Women's World Championship match, Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm. Like, you got to have like a women's title match on this show. Otherwise people are going to go fucking insane. And yep. So, yeah, I just take umbrage with people like suggesting, oh, why isn't it someone from Stardom? Stardom is not New Japan's women's division.
Thank you.
Stardom is their own thing. And like, I don't think they should be getting mixed up with the AEW.
No,
to be honest with you. So
my thing is that one, if they insist on having a women's match on this card, Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm both have experience in Japan. That should be the end of it. And people need to understand that Stardom and Tokyo Joshi Pro don't necessarily get along with each other, largely because Stardom has signed away several of Tokyo Joshi Pro's talent in the last couple of years. And it's one of those things where AEW's women's division, when they have talent from Japan come over, for the most part, aside from like Shida and who's a freelancer, Riho and Emi Sakura and Mei Tsurugo, who are all with Gato Move, the rest of the girls are from Tokyo Joshi Pro. So you can't just throw Maki Ito on a New Japan AEW show and say it's a star, it represents Stardom, because she's not in Stardom.
Yeah.
And so, people saying that Stardom should move their pay-per-view that they announced months ago. No. They Stardom has no obligation to fill in because AEW decides to do a pay-per-view with New Japan. Sorry, not sorry.
I mean, I feel like if AEW wants to have a Japanese partner, like, it should have been DDT. Yeah.
But that's what I don't understand, is that they've brought over Takeshita. They consistently bring over Maki Ito, Yuka Sakazaki, and other women from Tokyo Joshi Pro. Why are you not bringing people from Noah over? Why are you not working with DDT?
I just think it would be easier, like, you know, for all that, like, whoever, like, the Cyber Fight Side One would want to bring over, it'd be easier to negotiate that, because I think, you know, like, is DDT more so, like, because of the relationship with Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
But it just
burns my biscuit that people are just like, oh, well, Stardom should be working harder to accommodate this pay-per-view. No, they don't. They have a pay-per-view with New Japan in November.
They're doing perfectly fine on their own business-wise. And
they're doing better than New Japan at some points in their business-wise. So you know what?
They don't need to do anything with AEW.
Unless AEW needs Stardom that badly, but then are they going to... Exactly.
They don't. Like, I don't think they do. Like, their goal with their women's division is completely different from a company that's only a women's company. So.
Correct. But bottom line, Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm, it's going to be a good match.
Yeah, should be fine. Like,
but Thunder Rosa is also going to Tokyo Joshi Pro like in 2 weeks for Summer Sun Princess, and they're billing her as the AEW champion. So I don't expect Toni Storm to win the match.
No, Toni Storm also has like ties to Stardom. I would imagine she would like to go back to Stardom at some point for a tour if it can work out with her contract with AEW. But
I just don't know if that'll happen because she works with AEW. That's the thing.
Politics, everyone. Politics.
Politics.
Tag team title match. Three-way winner takes all tag team title match for the ROH World Tag Team titles and the IWGP World Tag Team titles. FTR, the current ROH champions, taking on Great O'Khan and Jeff Cobb, the current IWGP champions, taking on Roppongi Vice. Okay. I understand why this is a three-way, Karen. It's because Trent Barreto is going to get gonna eat the pin for somebody. Right? No, because
it's either him or Rocky.
It's gonna be Trent, because I think there's probably heat with Beretta because of the way he left New Japan to join AEW.
Okay.
That's my guess. Like, I think there's still like residual heat the way AEW was formed. Like,
I don't doubt it.
Like, Harold's gone, so this show could happen because Harold's not there anymore. But I bet you there's like, you know, yeah, well, hey, how about, like, listen, Trent Beretta and Rock Romero are not winning the IWGP World Tag Team titles.
Oh, they're not?
They're not.
That was my plan. I was like, you know, I just drape them in gold.
Rocky is older. Rocky's also a junior. Trent Beretta, probably is perceived as someone who betrayed New Japan. They were going to offer him a contract. They offered him a contract, and he said, no, I'm actually going to go do this thing with the Bucks and Kenny instead. Okay. You know, so I think United Empire are going to win this match because I can see FTR like getting heated up to take on the Young Bucks again for the AEW World titles. I think they don't need to be ROH champions. And I think it's going to be Jeff Cobb giving the fucking tour of the islands to Trent. 1, 2, 3. And like, you know, like, Tony, you know, who cares? It's the ROH tag team titles. This company doesn't even fucking exist right now as it stands in its current incarnation. So just give them another set of titles that, you know, when ROH starts up again, okay, Great Okan, Jeff Cobb, take on the Briscoes on an ROH show for these titles. And any thoughts?
It also avoids the potential issue with AAA and CMLL because FTR are the AAA tag team champions, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure, I don't know because I...
Yes, they are currently the reigning AAA World Tag Team Champions. So if we're going to play hoopty-doopty politics, Jeff and Okan would be the interim safe choice just because it wouldn't muddy anything with CMLL in New Japan.
There you go. Let's kind of just go through this. We're actually over our 90 minutes, I think. So
we're well over.
We're having a good conversation. It's all good. People are enjoying this talk.
I hope so.
IWGP US title, Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. Okay, Ospreay's winning. I'm not a fan of Orange Cassidy, though. As long as Ospreay does not devolve into the shtick, you know, and keeps it serious, like he's the Kenno to Orange Cassidy's Daisuke Sasaki.
The thing is, Ospreay can do comedy. So I feel like he's going to feed in, like he's gonna fight it, but he's gonna feed into it at some point. He'll still walk out with a championship, but he'll get his comedy chops going.
I think this is the most, wonder what that's gonna look like intrigue match like for most people.
Yeah.
First of all, it's one of the few singles matches on this show.
Yeah.
For a title.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I'm curious about this match. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it, but I don't hate it.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm not a huge fan of Orange Cassidy, so it doesn't really do anything for me. But like it should be interesting. Next, 6-man tag team match. The interesting pairing of Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara with Minoru Suzuki, taking on Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shota Umino, who is replacing. Who is he replacing? I think John Moxley, because like, you know, this probably
because it was supposed to be Tanahashi Punk.
Right. So there you go. That's it's interesting. It'll be very random. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know how this ends well for Shota Umino, but I'm trying to figure out why they also have Tay Conti listed next to Suzuki's name, but not Sammy Guevara.
Because they're, you know, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara.
Oh, because they're a tag team?
They're a tag team.
Okay. It's just the format.
She's quote unquote managing all three.
All of them? Okay.
Something like that.
But I would love to see Eddie Kingston's team get the advantage. But this is my problem with the build for Forbidden Door is that too much of it has hinged on stuff involving blood and guts, which is 3 days afterwards.
Yes.
It should be a standalone pay-per-view that doesn't involve a show that's 3 days later.
Hey, it's Tony not knowing how to...
I know, but it's, it's been because the bookings felt so chaotic because they're trying to do too much for two things at the same time. I feel like you should have looked at the calendar and been like, maybe we should move this one Wednesday night show back a few weeks, you know, into July. We got nothing planned. But that's neither here nor there.
Pac versus Miro versus Malakai Black versus Clark Connors for the AEW All-Atlantic Championship. It's a four-way, another multi-way match.
Yep.
I don't know. Miro, that's my guess.
I was going to go with either Miro or Pac because Pac's been in AEW since the very beginning. And yeah, I don't think he's had a title run of any kind yet. I mean, Miro's a safe choice because he's a tank.
No, but I still think they like Miro more.
You think?
I do. I think they like his. I think he has more of a connection with the fans than Pac does these days. And yeah, I'm going to go.
They're also saving Pac for the trios title when they start and when that starts becoming a thing.
Yeah, I don't know if they're ever going to give really Pac like you know
his flowers.
I think his window.
Yeah,
kind of closed as soon as with you know Punk and Danielson coming in and him, Tony just hiring nonstop. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm a big fan of Pac, so I would be giving him this tag team this title, and he could do it. I just think probably there's more, you know, like love for Miro. So yeah. I think they can give him this title. But
of the four options, you know, the UK is actually on the Atlantic Oceans, but maybe that's just me.
This whole title, this concept of this title is dumb. Let me just say that straight away.
Yes.
And following this match, Karen, is another four-way, this time for the IWGP World Heavyweight title. Jay White, the champion, taking on the former champ, Kazuchika Okada, taking on the former AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page, versus the Pin Eater, Adam Cole.
Yep, this is the match.
Yep. Adam Cole, junior heavyweight, by all standards of Japanese pro wrestling. And by the way, I am not saying anything about his physique or anything like that. He is a junior heavyweight, and junior heavyweights do not necessarily get shots at the IWGP World Heavyweight title. The only reason he's in this fucking match is because they could not decide on a proper singles match between Jay White and Hangman Adam Page. And are you fucking kidding me? You can't have just Jay White beat Hangman Adam Page. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, listen, this could be part of his story. Where he's like losing and then he rehabilitates himself by going on a win streak afterwards, including getting a win over Jay White later on down the line. But no, we're stuck with this. I'm sure the work in of itself will be fine. I have no desire to see another fucking four-way though. I'd rather have seen a singles title match for the IWGP title on the show. But I think Jay, you know, Okada hits the Rainmaker on Adam Cole. Jay White hits Okada with the switchblade, and then he pins Adam Cole. And Hangman's like, you know, somewhere looking like an idiot.
I have a feeling this match is going to involve a lot of Bullet Club bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of bad luck, Fale and Yujiro, Chase Owens.
Guys that are based in the States.
Yeah,
Gallows, yeah. Anderson. ELP because he's like
you know this could be the civil war is like the Adam Cole and the Young Bucks you know or you know formerly of the Bullet Club you know
yeah
I who knows I doubt it but
I was kind of hoping for a tag match honestly with Hangman and Okada versus Cole and White. I don't know why they felt the need to make an IWGP heavyweight match on this card
because Tony wanted one probably so this is like what. Ghetto and it was willing to give him it was a four way that Adam.
Well, Cole's then he better be willing to let somebody from New Japan win this match.
Yeah, Jay's gonna win the match.
Yeah,
like, he's gonna retain the title, so he's the one who's gonna get the pin, and it's gonna be Adam Cole who's gonna eat the pin.
Good, I hope so.
He's the most expendable person in this match.
Yeah,
and finally for the interim AWO title, Jon Moxley. Versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. This should be great. I think I'm very excited about this match. I think
yes.
This is a legit match that has not happened, as far as I can recall.
correct me
Tony
if I'm
Khan
wrong.
Has put the kibosh on it for the last 3 years.
Oh yeah, that's
because
right.
He didn't want New Japan to have the match, which is a really, really shit thing to do.
That's a terrible thing to admit in public too.
Yeah, it sure is.
But hey, that's Tony Khan for you there. God bless his heart for just providing me with endless comedy. But yeah, that should be great. Moxley, he's gonna probably become the world interim champion. I think it should be Tanahashi, but it's probably gonna be Moxley. Should be good. And yeah, like on paper, like all these four ways, all these like obvious pin eaters, it does nothing for me personally. Yeah. But and the randomness is kind of like there's something appealing sometimes about the randomness of some of these matchups, but at the same time, it seems very directionless and purposeless, this whole show. Someone said, AEW need New Japan? It was like, why does New Japan need AEW? Why do they need each other? Why do they need this show? Like neither of these companies need this show. Mind you, they're going to make they've already made a shit ton of money from it. So
correct.
There is that. Like, I'm not being blind to that, but in the grand scheme of like your booking for the year, it really does kind of like throw things off. I feel like I do think Jay is the champion because of the show.
That wouldn't surprise me. The other thing is that people are hinting that because Tanahashi Punk was supposed to be the match here, Tanahashi said in some interview that as a result, he wants to be the one to become interim champion. So then Punk, he's come to the US enough. He wants Punk to come to the to Japan for a match, meaning possibly a match at the Tokyo Dome, because, you know, he was one who fought Jericho a few years ago when Forbidden Door got started for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship.
Right.
So it's one of those things where it's like, I understand that they want to make this an annual thing, but they need to do better. Like, it needs to be better than this. Like, it just feels it's imbalanced, it's rushed. I feel that, you know, the time of the Orange Cassidy Ospreay match, Roosh is on record with Lucha Blog had translated an interview saying that Roosh was the one, or not Roosh, sorry, Andrade was the one that was supposed to be facing Ospreay, which is what the original singles match plan was before backstage politics got involved and he and the other guys who were working for AAA got pulled from the show. So
politics,
man.
It's this whole show is like rife with politics and good or bad.
It's trying to like it's trying to please a lot of people, but it also needs to be a fair amount of give and take, and not just saying, oh well, the number of losses on each side are even. It has to be you can't just have like all of the not highest ranked on the AEW power ranking talents be the ones to be the ones getting all the pins, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I know, but
like there needs to be balance as to, you know, if you're going to have, for example, if you're going to have Jay White win, it needs to be either Hangman or Adam Cole. It can't and should not be Okada. Period. So it's just like, it needs to be balance in the universe. And I don't know, based on AEW's track record with New Japan talent on their TV programming consistently, New Japan talent comes on AEW TV, but very seldom do they win on AEW TV. Mm. And that's always a problem I've had. It's not a given, it's not a reciprocal relationship, right, other than we have your talent on our show. And we sign away all of your talent from New Japan Strong.
Prediction: this show happens again next year.
If it does, it needs to be better than what they're bringing to the table this year.
If it does, I think they need to reschedule it to a different time of the year.
Yes, not right before the G1.
I guess
that's another problem, is that you can theoretically ruin someone's G1 plans.
I think it has to be before Dominion. I think it has to be before Dominion.
Like, yeah.
The show has to be before Dominion, so it doesn't, like, because I think between G1 and Wrestle Kingdom, like, they, New Japan has to think about how they're going to get to Wrestle Kingdom and their plans for that.
Yeah.
And before Dominion, I think is a good safe spot to be in.
But like before, like I would go as far as to say before Super Junior, like right after New Japan Cup, before Super Junior, like that sweet spot.
Yeah. I don't exactly remember what's on the AEW schedule during that time, what pay-per-views are there.
But Revolution was in March, on March 6th. I only know because I went to it because it's here in Orlando.
Yeah, so...
And Double or Nothing was Memorial Day weekend in Vegas, so that's at the end of May.
If it comes back, yeah, on paper, they have to give us the fans like more than this haphazard, sloppily put show that I think will be fun. When I actually
it'll be fun, but you have to go into it with tempered expectations, and that's what I've been saying about this pay-per-view the entire time.
Anyway, just like my final thoughts is that next year I'd be surprised if it happens again. Honestly, I think this has probably been such a massive headache for both sides.
Yes,
and depending on like the buy rate that this show does and how much money it generates for both New Japan and for AEW, like. If New Japan makes a shitload of money on the Japanese side through New Japan World for this, they're going to do it. If they're getting a cut of the American side of the pay-per-view, who knows? I don't know. Like, they might be like, oh, you can have it on New Japan World and you keep all the money for the Japanese side and you keep all the money on the American side, which is more in favor for AEW.
Yeah, because the buy rate outside of Japan is more expensive than it is inside Japan.
So, and then also, like, depending on how they're going to divide the gate. And how much merchandise? Apparently, AEW is terrible with having merchandise on hand at their live shows. So we'll see like how much merchandise, because New Japan is awesome with having merchandise at their live shows. So we'll see how much merchandising they're going to be able to sell at Forbidden Door. So depends on how much money New Japan makes. I think if New Japan does not make enough money to justify like going through all this hassle.
To
accommodate what they want, what AEW wants, like I can see them saying, "Nah, it's not worth it for us," you know.
Point in time, they travel might be open. They may not need to rely on American TV partnerships again, or they could by then they could have their own.
I just want to, this is the final thought: is that New Japan has an American touring company that they want to try to. Get off the ground and be more successful than what it already is. At some point, that's going to be like, well, we don't want to, then AEW and ROH are our competition. We're not going to share talent with either company because we want to try to make our own same. That's their ambition. That's the whole point of Strong is to have their own American division. That's like, I don't think it'll have any kind of TV deals that rival anything that AEW has right now.
Correct.
Or whatever ends up with Ring of Honor, it's probably be on a similar level to Ring of Honor, probably. But anyways, at some point, AEW and New Japan are just going to be like, well, you know, we're rivals with one another. We don't want to work together anymore. And that could happen as early as next year. But Karen, you know, we're going to just go quickly through one idea for All Japan because we are kind of over time here. But Jake Lee has become the Triple Crown champion. He defeated Kento Miyahara. This is in, I think, as a result of like the aborted kind of, you know, title run he had because he got injured, and so he's gonna probably go into Budokan as the Triple Crown champion, and I think it's great. I think you know Kento's your reliable guy, but you need to make Jake. You need to give Jake a significant title run with this title that he has right now. I think you need to build up Yuma Aoyagi. Recently, Naoya Nomura has returned to the company. He's still a freelancer, apparently. He's doing stuff with, what is it, Gambare?
Gambare Pro.
Which is part of the Cyber Fight umbrella, as well as indie promotion called Capture. He's the Capture champion. He's doing like this. He looks like he's like doing kind of a shooter gimmick. I saw his match against Hokuto Omori, which is fun. So, but it looks like he's going to be doing more dates with All Japan. Hopefully he just re-signs with them fully in the near future. But like, this is an exciting time because you have the next Dream 4 reunited, not as partners, because like Yuma's split from Kento. I think his brother Atsuki is going to be joining with him, but you know, Yuma and Jake are currently teaming together, and Naoya Nomura's got Misuki Watase from Gambare Pro as his partner. They're a faction called the Real Blood. So I think it's very exciting because you get these four that I think are, excuse me, like the future of All Japan, the past, the present, and the future of All Japan. And it's exciting, and along with Shotaro Shino in the company, excuse me, pardon me.
We're talking too much. We're running out of air.
but you know, Jake is a champion. Just your quick thoughts, and then we'll wrap it up there.
Yay, Jake's champion. I've been waiting for him to come back and be healthy and like to win it back. So yay. Huzzah. Yay.
So next show, we'll try to, like, whether it's with John or with you again, we'll see. We'll talk more about the things that are happening in All Japan. I think it's really exciting. It's worth people's time to check it out. But Karen, you have a lot of things that you have to plug. I just got to quickly do mine. MCU later. The long and winding Royal Road. Over at Grapple, I do the Obi-Wan Kenobi Star Wars review show. Hello there. And this weekend, we're going to talk about the last episode 5 and 6. Excuse me. I apologize to everyone. But Karen, you have so many things that you've been doing recently since last time we talked to you. Let's just quickly get the plugs and then we'll wrap it up there. Go ahead,
right,
please.
So if you want to follow along for all the details, Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, at Hey Karen Sensei. You can find my post coverage of Stardom and Dream Slam Weekly over at postwrestling.com. And probably the one that you're probably hinting at is if you are a reader of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the digital version dropped yesterday on the 23rd, the October 2022 issue. I interview Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yay.
Awesome. And one of the questions is about Forbidden Door. It'll be available in newsstands on July 12th.
So check that out. Pro Wrestling Illustrated. My God, I used to read that when I was a kid. It's amazing. Congratulations. That's a really cool deal that you got to, one, interview Tanahashi, and two, it's in Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
And then I also interviewed Go Shiozaki earlier this month for Cyber Fight Festival. So
incredible. Like, just so much content being put out by Karen. It's like I look at your output, Karen, and I just like, wow, I wish I could do that. Wait, actually, no, I do not have the energy for that. So kudos to you for having the energy to put out that much content. And
I have a lot of coffee, man.
And just really build a nice community around the stuff that you're doing. So, like, congratulations on that, and continued growth and participation here at Post Wrestling. No matter how big your star becomes outside
Post
of Post
is,
Wrestling.
Post is home. Post will always be my home.
So this show's gotten very long, but it's been a fun conversation. But on behalf of Karen, I want to thank all the listeners for sticking with us to the end, hopefully. And until next time, goodbye.